his cousin is America's only born and bred Southern liberal cop host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! There, we've made it to the end of a week. It is Friday, and you know what? It's a lovely Friday. It's a lovely Friday here in the hills and hollers. About 11 o'clock last night, the sleet started falling. It quickly transformed itself to snow, and it has been
Head On with Bob
beautifully snowy gray here all day long.
With America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of the sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountain poverty. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On.
Just like being at a holiday party at some corporate somewhere, and
falling over the hills,
the little combos just playing its heart out.
Left of wonderful West Bicod, Virginia. We've been hearing blasts.
Had to pay extra for the piccolo.
A couple of them in the 4 o'clock Eastern time hour.
Okie dokie. Okay, I just thought I'd do that to set the mood for that.
Here in the hills.
Just for the fun of it.
Or as the fish wife said,
and I've got I hope I get the opportunity in the program. Your conversations, of course, always come first. But I hope I get the opportunity in the program to talk, to play a little bit.
It's Friday and everything.
A little bit of
topics are wide
about,
open. Whatever you want to bring to the table,
the segment
fine.
And several
that's
of you said
not
it to
that it's different from Monday
Rachel
through Thursday.
Maddow did on her program
but,
last
you know,
night
we
about clean
trying to lighten it up a little bit Friday. Although
God,
lightening
I
it up,
glad the issue is getting the attention that it deserves.
I'm a moron. Hold on.
But we need to get Rachel down here.
Thank you, ELO. Should I just start things all over again? Sorry about the rerun. It's Friday, like I said. Sometimes I forget stuff. I guess we had multiple personality Bob there for a little bit. But he's gone. Bob from the past is gone now. The time machine has shunted him back to Thursday where he belongs. But, no, we'll try to, I don't know, try to have a little fun somehow or another tonight. Good news! Start things off, very good news. Perhaps you've already heard this. The caroling lumps of caca from the coal creeps is gone. I guess they were taken home, and you know when you're a caroling lump of coal and you screw up, what happens? You get burned. They're gone. You can't find them anymore. You can still find them singing Frosty the Coal Man, preserved for all eternity on YouTube. But they pulled it. After only 3 days, the Coal Association, what they thought was going to be a really cute little PR move, turned out to be a public relations disaster. And they pulled it. They pulled the little singing lumps of... So no more Adeste Fidelis, no more Silent Night. But you know what? They didn't go quietly into that dark night. Let's see, what's this guy's name? American, what do they call themselves? American Coalition for Clean Coal Electricity, ACE. Their vice president for communications is the creepy little man named Joe Lucas. And he got a little bit bent about the hell he was catching for, you know, bowdlerizing Silent Night, what Rachel Maddow called the single most well-known song in the world about Christmas. They got called out on it, and Mr. Lucas got a little touchy. He said, I'll put my years as a Sunday school teacher, church deacon, and church musician up against just about anybody else when it comes to understanding hymnology and respect for religious traditions. Hymnology? Is there a hernology? Well, yeah, that's when you cough and you have to go get the hernia fixed, the hernology. Hymnology? So I guess Mr. Lucas is saying that somewhere in his little hymnal there in the church, there's a little line that says, under Silent Night, that says, may be parodied for purposes of lying to the American public about a dummied-up phony baloney, the energy initiative on the part of the coal industry? Is that what it says? And, of course, this is the second time that this front group, their old name used to be Americans for Balanced Energy Choices, ABEC. Yeah, you know, kind of what the sound you make when you have to breathe a bunch of coal smoke. Now, they got busted last February. They had to take down a promotional campaign that was using children. And, you know, we talked about it on this program, the little girl sitting on the bed with the nice white starched sheets on her bed and the curtains, the lace curtains billowing in the wind, talking about how I'll live in a world that is powered by clean coal. But a bunch of physicians got together and strenuously objected to using children who are the ones who are most frequently poisoned by coal as shills for it. And so they had to pull that one. You know, this is the gang that can't shoot straight. They shot themselves in one foot with by pimping out little children to hustle their filthy business. And now they've been caught in heresy, blasphemy perhaps. Not that I believe in that kind of stuff, but a lot of people do. And Joe Lucas is positively... Oh, I'm sorry, maybe a little early in the program, but Joe Lucas is positively pissy about it. And it's, well, we won one, and it's fun to win. This is a blog post over at America's Power. The clean coal carolers are getting a lot of attention around the internet this week. I'm not surprised that people who don't think coal has any place in America's energy future don't seem to appreciate the clean coal carolers. And MSNBC's Rachel Maddow, for example, didn't like the use of Silent Night in our original group of songs. I'll put my years as a Sunday school teacher, church deacon, and church musician up against just about anybody else when it comes to understanding hymnology and respect for religious traditions.
Steel cage death match in hymnology.
That said, before we even received one response to our blog, we decided to remove the Silent Night tune from the Clean Coal Caroler feature.
Sure you did.
That's not to say that we agree with Rachel Maddow's claim that it was inappropriate. It is merely a recognition that the facts of promoting energy independence, keeping energy costs affordable, and investing in new technologies to make coal an even cleaner energy option is so important, we don't want there to be any impediment for getting that message out. But remember that this cuts both ways. So you might want to be sure that we'll make our list and check it twice for things that we might find offensive too. Gee, in light of all the natural references in Christmas carols, I don't think we have to worry about that side of the equation. Oh, Christmas tree. Let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. What you sort of heard earlier, because I was too screwed up to realize that I still had the rerun stream going. And one of the best parts out of all of this is that I guess very few people knew it because they only had 13 friends. But they the Clean Coal Carolers had a Facebook page too. And it turns out that the only friends they had on their Facebook pages were names like Al Asma. And what else? They had a friend like Bill Blacklung. Nope. What a tone deaf failure this has been. And it feels so good. It almost, you know what? It's almost put me in the Christmas spirit. And, you know, another blogger wrote over at thesmogblog.com, "This latest publicity stunt is absolutely absurd and shows just how far the coal lobby is willing to go to market their dirty product as somehow being clean." What were some of the other blog posts? Coal sacrilegious caroling, clean coal carolers from an industry run by morons, clean coal carolers, Christmas gone all wrong, clean coal for Christmas, clean coal front group, Hucks, Frosty the Coal Man, and other brazen assaults on Christmas spirit. You won't believe your ears. Frosty the Coal Man, clean coal night, deck the halls with clean coal. Well, it's all gone now. And you helped run them off. And we helped run them off. And we have them running scared. So, one of these for you guys. Very proud. Very proud. This is just... I love beating them. Because they're getting a little bit nuts. They really are. You know, I mentioned, I guess it was a week or so ago, I mentioned Don Blankenstein swine ship going a little bit nuts about the fact that he's finally, you know, the heat's on. And him being a fiend of coal, he's just liable to combust. And for your entertainment, I think this is what it is. For your entertainment, I thought you might like to actually hear the voice of Don Blankenswine and abject, utter, complete, total insanity.
I don't believe climate change is real. I do believe that the Arctic is melting and the Antarctic is getting colder. I believe it's a normal cycle. This is the first speech in 22 years at the Tug Valley Institute that I've made in November while it was snowing outside. So it's not my greatest concern.
Yeah, so it's snowing outside, so therefore global warming doesn't exist. And coal isn't contributing to the disaster in our
climate. Anyway, they asked Pelosi and Reid if they would let the $25 billion that had been given to the big three be used for the bailout instead of using it to make green cars, and they wouldn't do it. I mean, they're more concerned as greeniacs about what's going to happen to, you know, the type of car we're riding than they are this entire country. So it's very unfortunate that not only do we have problems, but we don't.
Well, you get the idea.
Even understand the problem or how to deal with it. I'll talk to you about that in a moment because it's not just important.
This man is insane. Not just a little bit. You know, completely. And the cool thing is that they're on the run.
Not just the fiends of coal, but the right wing in general. Do you know who Richard Cizik is? Richard Cizik is basically the lobbyist for the National Association or National Evangelical Association. And Richard Cizik has already earned the ire of the knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing faithful by suggesting that by promoting a program that he calls climate care. Climate care. In other words, as an evangelical, Richard Cizik has decided that not poisoning the planet is something that is in line with the teachings of his God-man. And that caused a big enough stink. But a few days ago, what was it, December 4th, December 2nd, Peter sent me the audio, and it's he appeared, Pastor, Brother, Reverend Cizik, on Fresh Air with Terry Gross from WHYY in Philadelphia. And she asked him who he voted for. And he said, well, I'm not going to tell you who I voted for in the general election, but suffice to say that I voted for Barack Obama in the primary. Which is, that's enough information, I think. Give you an idea. And that drove him nuts. But then he started talking about the current status of the evangelical community. And in so doing, breached one of the cardinal sins of evangelical fundamentalism. In other words, he didn't come out and say that he just wanted all the queers killed. Really? No kidding. And that is, well, he's been forced out. And it's a sickening story. It's a heartbreaking story. Because the man, you know, whether I agree with his theology or not, he has very clearly done his part and spoken truth as he understood it. And that is not tolerable at all in the fundamentalism industry. Among other things, the Human Rights Campaign issued a press release saying that they were extremely disturbed by the purge of Reverend Cizik. And while the right wing likes to complain about little old ladies getting their styrofoam crosses taken from them in dummied up events, this isn't the same thing. This is Stalinist. This is that kind of purge. And, of course, the gloating has begun. Chief gloater, of course, is the focus on the family and the American Family Association. Over at the AFA's weird little so-called news site, you know, the news site that renames people named Tyson Gay, they rename them Tyson Homosexual, that news site. And here's a quote from one of our dear friend Peter Godbold's most loathed organizations. There they are, the Institute on Religion and Democracy. They've got a guy there named Mark Tooley. He says, Sizek has been very outspoken and in some ways off the reservation for the last 5 or 6 years in terms of his global warming activism, which the Board of National Association of Evangelicals had initially somewhat disavowed, but that had not discouraged him. So it left the impression that the board and the president of NAE were somewhat passive, and that Richard Sizek pretty much could say and do almost whatever he wanted to do in Washington. But clearly that was not the case, at least this time. And let's see, the National Association of Evangelicals has official positions strongly supporting traditional marriage and opposing same-sex marriage, and certainly by implication, same-sex civil unions. So it seemed to be a very clear case where Sizek was ignoring the very obvious official positions of his own organization, for which he is supposed to be the chief spokesman and lobbyist in Washington. There's only one problem. He was asked the question, Terry Gross is anything but boisterous or loud or noisy or mean. And he was asked questions of a personal nature for a personal response, and he gave his personal response, and for that he has been denied his livelihood. Then there's Wendy Wright, president of Concerned Women's for Merca. And she said, Sizek's views are not anywhere close to biblical orthodoxy, traditional Christian theology, nor the bulk of evangelicals, who ground their faith in the Bible. There they are away. There they are, flogging away at that book they don't read.
Hello?
Hello? Who's this?
Juanita.
Oh, hey, Juanita. How are you?
Did you know you rang me or not?
I rang you.
Am I supposed to be on?
Yeah, there you are.
Okay. I was trying to figure out now, who was the guy that you played him talking, and he didn't believe in global warming? Who was that, you said?
That was Don Blankenship.
Okay, now who is he?
He's the CEO of Massey Energy. He's personally responsible for destroying the lives and homes and communities and environment and lifestyle and health of hundreds, if not thousands, of and perhaps millions of not just West Virginians but Appalachians. He's a big time fiend of coal.
Yeah, it just reminds me of like the cigarette people. You know, remember when Ken Starr was their lawyer?
Oh yeah.
And they got up and they were all asked if they believed it was addictive.
Right.
And, oh, no, they didn't believe that. And doesn't it kind of sound like that? And then when they get caught, like they got caught on that coal, those coal kids or whatever they are, then they want to get all huffy, you know, because I think they know they're doing wrong.
Of course. How can they not?
They know they're lying, and they don't like to get caught. You know, usually that's the way it is. I know if I've ever told a lie and somebody caught me in it, I didn't like it. You know, when back yonder. Well, of course, I never tell a lie now. Never, ever, ever.
Right. But whether it's energy, coal, the hate-filled bigots in the religion industry. They all behave in the same way, and they're behaving right now like they're on the run, Juanita. That's why they had to lash out at Richard Sizek. That's why Don Blankenship is losing his mind, and that's why the coal carolers got disappeared from the internets.
Yeah, and they don't realize that they could go about it in a different way, you know, and really con people, but they're going about it in a way that, it just, anybody would think that was stupid little clean cold or whatever I would think, and not everybody, but it's just so obvious.
Well, they're just, you say they could do it another way.
That's what I
want to point out, Juanita. They could do it another way, but by the same token, they couldn't do it another way. These organizations, again, whether it's the religion industry or whether it's a monster like Don Blankenship or a fundamentalist the freak organization like the NAE, they all only know how to operate from a position of blind, unmitigated hate. And as a consequence of that, they can't behave. They can't. The leopard can't change its spots.
And they've lied so much, and they're so jealous of anybody. They don't understand, that it's just like when Bush went in, they claimed it was going to be bipartisan and all that kind of junk, and he just kept on all the time talking about the liberals wouldn't do this and liberals wouldn't do that, no matter what it was. And, of course, liberals did everything.
Yeah, well, and as recently as the last couple of weeks, he sat there with a camera on him and a microphone rolling saying, well, we had to attack Saddam because he wouldn't let the inspectors in. Well, the inspectors got in. You know that. I know that.
They had to leave for their life.
He told them to get out before he started
bombing. Yes, he did.
And you want to know how bad it's gotten, Juanita? This is how bad it's gotten. The thing with the auto crisis, the auto company crisis.
Yeah.
Is so bad.
Yeah.
That Dick Cheney tried to do some arm twisting on Republican senators.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and it's so bad that he went to them and said, "If you people don't stop this, and let this bailout go through, the Republican Party is going to be remembered as the party of Hoover forevermore."
Yeah.
George Hoover Bush.
Yep.
George Herbert Hoover Walker Bush.
Oh boy.
But the thing is that, that's the interesting thing out of it, one of the interesting things out of this whole misbegotten episode is that Republicans in the United States Senate and to a certain extent the House as well are thumbing their nose at George Bush. He has hung.
They sure are.
Yeah, they've carried water for him, and now he's dirt to them. He just is.
Yeah. In a way, he's been used.
And George.
He did it.
Yeah.
On his own. He did it willingly.
And they were his foot soldiers in the culture wars and the real wars. But now he's on his way out, and they're treating him like Republicans treat each other once they're out of power. Power's all that they're interested in.
But he still is up there and with a lot of the religious right. And Huckabee's going around to the religious shows, too.
Oh, I know. But the best thing, the worst thing for himself that radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee could have done is to have gone on Jon Stewart's Daily Show, because Jon Stewart had him for lunch.
Oh, yeah, I love Jon Stewart.
I mean, that truly was death by a thousand cuts. I mean,
yeah,
when Jon Stewart, I could get the audio.
I have
but,
to hear that. I haven't heard it yet.
Well, you can find it over at Think Progress, among other things. But when Jon Stewart asks him, so, Mike, when did you choose to be straight? Because he keeps making that same old stupid, argument that sexuality is a choice.
Right.
When did you choose to be straight? We've been waiting years for that, haven't we? And, of course, it's an unanswerable question because no one wakes up.
Yeah, that is so crazy. You know, to say that people choose, I mean, when did he choose to be straight? When did anybody choose?
And see, that's some of what Richard Cizik was dealing with the National Association of Evangelicals, because what he was talking about with Terry Gross was the fact that younger evangelicals aren't buying into the old hate anymore. They're still pro-life.
God helps us.
But they've been raised in a culture that has been inclusive of gay people. And, people who are out, and they've seen that it's not not bringing Sodom and Gomorrah to Main Street. And as a consequence of that, they're not as, they don't get wrapped up in the right-wing hate of the elders of the evangelical movement.
And there's some of them are gay, too, you know. Plenty of them.
Sure.
They say that pretty much all the song leaders, you know, the music leaders in churches are gay.
Well, I don't know if you can use that kind of a broad generalization,
well, that's
but
I'm sure some of them are. I don't mean they say. You know what?
Yeah.
People believe that.
But there are a lot, you know, and that just goes to prove that there are a lot of, you can't determine somebody's spirit or the quality of someone's faith or the depth thereof by their sexuality. That, just as Mark Levine pointed out and as Peter Godbold pointed out on so many occasions, it's so irrelevant. It's like having blue eyes or brown eyes or right-handed or left-handed.
And, you know, we've all got something that other people don't like.
Sure, I mean,
no matter what.
Some people are
too smart for some people.
Does a Southern Baptist choir sing worse if the minister of music directs them with his left hand than with his right? Of course not.
Right.
What the spotlight's wanting is the completely pathological, weird obsession with sex that conservatives and authoritarians and right wingers have.
It's like disobey all the commandments except that one, and then they all disobey it too. But that's okay because they're Republicans.
Right. And as our buddy Tosh pointed out, even in the case of the pro-lifers, goodness gracious, that Mosaic law that these fundamentalists are so fond of doesn't even prescribe a criminal penalty for infanticide. In ancient, you know, among the ancient children.
Yeah, I understand that. I've heard that, yeah.
Yeah, you just paid a civil penalty, like a park, you know, like a 2,300-year-old or 3,300-year-old, I don't know, double-parked camel.
Uh-huh.
You know, it was the same kind of penalty for killing a pregnant woman.
Is that in, like, Deuteronomy or something, you think?
Yeah, I think it is in Deuteronomy.
What would be a good word to look up? I can look it up on the internet, really.
Unborn child.
And it goes by that, okay.
Yeah, look it up under unborn child.
I've heard other people say that, you know, talking about that, and
I seem to think that there's something involving the payment of a shoe. I kid you not.
Of a shoe?
A shoe, yes. A sandal.
Okay.
Killing an unborn child costs a sandal.
Oh, okay.
Or maybe I've got something.
Well, probably they were very valuable sandals, maybe. I don't know. But one thing I want to tell you, this is going back way yonder. I don't know if I've ever told this before, but I told you that I left my church going because of the politics. And the last church I went to, they didn't have that much politics in it. A few people would say something. But I never will forget, and it was when Hillary was coming out with the medical coverage thing.
Right.
And at that time I was working a full-time job. I had no insurance, and I needed to go to the doctor. I just didn't have the money to go, you know.
Sure.
And I didn't. But anyway, I was kind of hoping, you know, we would get something. And I figured that whatever she did, you know, it could be worked out. You know how they do. They never pass something that's presented to them. They always just put in other things. Well, of course, it was when Clinton first went in, and down here, all you'd hear was, you know, they hated them all. And just everywhere you would go. I mean, they were a mockery. But anyway, I never will forget the last time I went to church, and we had a wonderful service. I was feeling good. And this one woman that I just thought she was like an angel, she comes up to me, and all of a sudden she starts talking about, you know, about what Pat Robertson said about that. Coverage.
Right.
And, you could just see hate in her. And I said, well, I don't even have any coverage. You know, said, oh, we can't go to the doctors we want to go to and all that, blah, blah, you know. And this was Pat Robertson's doing. He had a lot to do with that not going through. He was against it. You know, I mean, he's influenced a lot of people. But I would love to know when he goes up before God and God says, why did you not want these people to have any kind of health care? And it was such a lie back then, because back then you couldn't go to the doctor of your choice down
no,
here.
No, no, that's...
Pat was everywhere, but you had to go...
But you know, how's he going to answer? It doesn't matter how he answers. The conclusion, if you buy into what's in the book, the conclusion is foreordained. If you did it under the least of these, you did it under
right.
me. If you did not do it under the least of these, you did not
right.
do it under me. So,
right.
yeah, there you go.
But I don't know. I would just like for him to also... It wasn't just the Republicans. It was him. And his, and that's when I quit going to church, because she was so hateful about it. And I just said, I ain't taking this no more. That it just the thing that broke the camel's back. And I said, this is it. And you know, that's the way it's. And you know how long ago that's been. The only time I've been in church is to go to funeral.
And I don't think anybody would, I don't think there's a single person in this audience who would question your faith, Juanita.
That what?
That would question your faith. Because.
Well, some
know,
of them would, but, you know, you,
right,
you got to go and have that fellowship. Well, you're not supposed to fellowship with demonic people.
Right. Oh, you generation of vipers.
Right. You know, you're not, that's not what it's all about. And, you know, I've gotten closer to God on being by myself than I have anywhere else. So,
well, what does it say about, you know, go into a closet and then come out and go about your business?
Yeah,
or,
yeah.
And, you know, be in a still place. That kind of makes sense.
I've been like, I'd be so sick. And, you know, nobody come to see. Nobody do anything for you, you know. But that's when I've been the closest, really got to know him better, know about him better. And, you know, so I think that's the fellowship with believers. I mean, if you go and they're just talking stuff like that, there's nothing about that that's going to lift you up. So yeah, I mean, I felt like maybe I was doing the wrong thing, but I had to do it. That's the way I had, you know, I had to be true to myself.
Well, and the same thing applies to Richard Cizik, Juanita.
Yeah.
Apparently,
I don't know him.
Well,
I don't know him.
He's not on, you know, he's not on the TV, and he's not a televangelist. He's just he's a lobbyist. He's a pastor, and you know, he's a full on evangelical. Okay,
mm-hmm.
he is believes all that stuff, but he takes his faith seriously, and because he takes his faith seriously, he answered the questions that were propounded to him in an honest and open fashion, and
mm-hmm.
for that, he has been thrown under the bus.
Yeah, they'll do it. They will do it. They kill their own.
Yeah, and precisely. In a way, I guess Richard Cizik and you had a similar spiritual experience.
Yeah.
Now, he wasn't looking to leave the organization, but when called, when
he was thrown out. Huh?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to try to. I don't want to try to. You know, well, you know, he resigned.
Mm-hmm. Well.
But you know they. You know, with those fundamentalists, you know, you wake up with a donkey or a goat's head in your
yeah,
bed
right.
or something. Right. So, yeah, he resigned, but he didn't resign. So, but you know, I understand that because, you know, I have a lot of fun with the fundies because they some of these fun, you know, these fundies believe really stupid things and they're really a hateful gang. But I would never question, I won't question somebody's faith.
No.
You have the right to that under the First Amendment to the Constitution of this United
right.
States. And as such, within his faith, he could not, if he had gone on there and said, oh, no, we can't let the gay people get married because it's an affront to the tradition of marriage
right.
and one man and one woman, three concubines
yeah.
like it says in the Bible, and do all that froth
right.
in the mouth garbage that they do, then... You know, apparently this man probably knows the Ten Commandments.
Yeah.
And as a consequence, he could not bear false witness against his neighbor. Because when you stand in public and you say that the two guys picking out a China pattern is going to cause heterosexual marriages to collapse, you are bearing false witness not just against a neighbor, but an entire community of neighbors who are your fellow citizens in this country.
And, you know, another thing is what's caused them to fall so far. I mean, down here, over half of the people that marry get divorced, at least half of them.
Yeah, that whole one man and one woman thing isn't working out real well.
No, it's not.
No.
Something's wrong somewhere.
And, you know, I think there's actually a petition drive on in California to, you know, for one of those propositions that they have on their ballot out there. There's a petition drive on to eliminate divorce from California law.
Well, that's what they ought to do, especially for these people. You know, I used to go to small churches, and then something would happen. They would break up, and then I'd go back to the big church. And I remember one time I was gone for a while, and I went back, and just about all the choir members who were married were divorced, and some of them were going with other people who had gotten divorced. Some of them got people from the outside, and it was just amazing.
Well, you know what? You remind me of something, Juanita. And a lady passed away yesterday, and in certain communities, she was, to say the least, iconic. Her name was Betty Page, and she was one of the big swinging doors of the sexual revolution. She was a pinup girl, beautiful, beautiful young woman in her day.
Uh-huh.
And she had a hell of a life later on. She did one of the early centerfolds in Playboy. She was innocuous, but she was tormented by people like Tennessee Senator Estes Kefauver. She was hounded by the FBI with them waving her pinup pictures in her face.
Just for that?
Or? Yeah, just for that. And you know, some of them were slightly kinky. Because they were there, she did. There was a picture of her wearing leather with a whip, and you know, stuff like that. You know, but anyway, after that, after she had been hounded out of being a model, she said she was living in Florida, and she saw a white church with a neon cross, and she had literally a come to Jesus moment, and she got herself all saved. And she was a decent human being, and she wanted to be a missionary. But the church forbade her from being a missionary.
Because of her past.
Because she had a divorce. Not
because
she had naked pictures taken or nothing, but because she had a divorce.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, they can't... Somewhere along the way, the level of hypocrisy that the right-wing religion industry engages in has got to cause some level of spiritual spontaneous combustion or something, don't you think?
Well, you know, when Tammy and them, you know, Tammy Baker and all them, you know, she was supposed to have had an affair with the guy that wrote Monster Mash, you know?
I didn't know that. But
yeah, well, he was a Christian at the time. He wrote a beautiful Christian song. He was there all the time. And
I know that song, sure.
Yeah, and they showed pictures of her and his wife, you know. His wife didn't have any use for her after that, but they showed pictures of her and his wife, you know, dressed up really sexy, you know, had pictures made.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the church people, and I liked her, okay, you know, but nevertheless, you know, the people do things, you know, nobody's really, I mean, it's, everybody's got something in their life, you know, that, but, you know, if they do it, it's all right. I don't know.
Do as I say and not as I do. I know.
Right.
Juanita, great to hear from you this evening. We got some lights lit up and going to.
Okay, you take care and have a good night and a good weekend.
You too. You too.
Okay.
At least you won't have
bye-bye.
To deal with ice on your roads like I got here.
No. Okay.
Okay. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Okay, let's keep this little the Friday evening extravaganza rolling on. Hey, welcome to the program.
This is Kate deep in the heart of snowy Dixie.
Yes, it is. It is. How are you?
It's not snowy here, and it only snowed about 60 miles east of me, and, you know, wasn't. But they closed I-55 and I-12 this morning because of accidents, and, God, it was awful.
Well, you know, folks down there, and it's, you know, you don't see enough of it to really learn to deal with it. Folks down there can't drive on it.
No, it was kind of funny.
Well, barring the broken limbs and so forth, watching deep Southerners try to drive in snow is comical.
It is. Well, I'm just watching them react to it from the room. You know, I mean, I've had kind of an international, a multicultural week, and it's been kind of all over the board, so I didn't quite know where to jump into this. I definitely don't want to jump back into the stream that you were just in. God, those people. Anyway.
Oh, by the way, the chat room says hey.
Oh, hey, y'all.
you're getting real good at that y'all thing.
I reckon. I heard, I don't know if it was in my sleep last night or on the way to work this morning or something, there was a BBC story on mountaintop removal.
Yeah.
And I thought it was just wonderful. I thought, ooh, they're getting everywhere. So I didn't know about
it. We've got them all. We really do have them on the run. I think that this is one we're going to win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And every time I leave a light bulb on, I think about another lump of coal. And, oh, God, you ruined me. Way back in Arizona. what else was I had a little list here. Oh, this morning, last week, I came into work and there was a black coffee cup sitting on a desk, and I said, "Who's this?" And she said, "I think it belongs to so and so." And I said, "What?" And it was a Blackwater cup, and it has.
Ew.
It says "Train hard or don't train at all, Blackwater something something" in that little logo, and I thought, "Oh my God." And I was going to throw it away until I found out who it belonged to. And I thought, well, that wouldn't be really nice. So I just left it there. And I said to one of my coworkers, well, this is just this symbology. They're getting us slowly but surely. You know, they're dressing the cops up in the black fatigues and, you know, the SWAT teams. And we're getting slowly, slowly, slowly acclimated to the takeover, and they just pass these cups around, and, you know, she got it from the sheriff's department.
Has it got that bear claw logo on it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah, and I when I asked the gal about it, I said, "Is this yours?" And she said, "Yeah." And I said, "Is this a joke, right?" She said, "No." And I said, "Oh, okay." And she said, "A friend gave it to me in the sheriff's department." And I said, "Oh, okay, whatever." So that made me shudder. And she, and tagging onto one of Malloy's rants last night, I'm extremely concerned because nobody's scared, you know, with the bailout, you know. And this morning I had to, when I came in to work, I had to I chose to diffuse the $72 an hour argument. That one, you know?
Yeah.
And I think I did a fair job, but people were kind of standing there dumbfounded. And I said, who, you know, like, if they don't, when Detroit goes bankrupt, you know, maybe, you know, however you believe what the union should have negotiated and taken a cut in pay or, you know, it just, well, they're just greedy. And
And the thing is, the repiglick and talking points have gone clean to the bone with a lot of people. Yeah, I saw a guy on, you know, CNN has this thing where you can, like, video yourself talking about the news, and I saw this idiot talking about, you know, well, they're taking $70 an hour, and they don't need no $70 an hour. Nobody needs to make $70 an hour.
Right.
Yeah. Well, okay, that's mainly because they don't make $70 an hour. But tell that to somebody that's been hearing Richard Shelby or this Bob Corker creep or any of these, you know, Tom Coburn, Jim Demented, you know, and there's Demented out there. And, oh, there's going to be riots in the streets, you know, calling people who, you know, do a sit-in of their factory rioters.
Right, right. Well, I said so Detroit goes bankrupt, we're not making cars anymore, okay? The suppliers are going to not have any place to sell their goods, and who's going to, you know, what are they going to, they're all going under so quickly.
This can, see, nobody seems to recognize, and you've touched the nerve right there, Kate. This can take out all those little non-union scab plants that are all over the South.
Oh, yeah.
Because the suppliers don't just exist to supply Detroit. They supply Maysville, Kentucky, and Tuscaloosa County, Alabama, and somewhere in South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Darn tootin' they do.
And I said, well, who's going to make the lug nuts for your car? And who's going to make the fan belts for your riding mower? And who's going to make cement trucks and fire engines and cop cars and how many big rigs can stay on the road if they don't have repairs, they don't have supplies to repair? How are they going to deliver groceries or the cheap China junk to Walmart? And I'm talking to the woman who owns the Blackwater Cup.
Oh, you can pick them, can't you?
Oh, yeah, it was intentional, kind of, I think, you know.
Needling this morning, were you, Kate? Needling a little bit? Poking people with the sharp stick?
Yeah, right. And I said, if the tens of thousands of people that are out of work and they run out of unemployment and they have no money, and how do they eat? And then who's going to pay income taxes to keep the bridges repaired? And her mouth just dropped open. Her eyes got great big, and she said, how do you sleep at night? And I just smiled, and she said, I just can't think about things like that. I would just make myself sick.
Oh, dear God, you got Scarlett O'Hara.
Uh-huh.
You know, I was just looking at the chat room a minute ago, and Peter wanted me to make sure and let you know that he's celebrating your phone call by wearing the boa you sent him. And that fits.
Don't email, Peter. Don't email. Just make it public, okay? It was blue. I couldn't find a lavender one, Peter, but I thought the blue would go with your
But, you know, you can, it's Scarlett. The reason I'm in it, I'll worry about it tomorrow. And if we were doing video, you'd see me with my right hand throwing my boa over my shoulder. I'll worry about it tomorrow.
Yes.
And that's what, you know. That's what she'll do. You're the person there in the office. That, oh, I just can't think about it. It's giving me a sick headache. I need to lie down.
Well, everybody, I've come to realize I do a little bit of diagnosing, and I drop little sentences here and there, and everybody in this office is of that mind. They are, one person goes home and eats supper and watches Andy Griffith reruns. Another one goes home and watches the vampire shows, and another one goes home and American Idol thing. They have this running dialogue about American Idol or something, I don't know. Anyway, nobody, I'm not even sure they even watch the news, and so it just makes. And then one woman has a W sticker on the back of her car and listens to Rush Limbaugh on her way to work, and so. You know, it's a really strange place to be in, and I just had to drop that bomb this morning in the 5-gallon bucket in the middle of the room that's full of crap, and I just take a 5-pound rock and hold it about 5 feet above the bucket and drop it in the bucket and walk away. Somebody said, "Oh, you get crap all over you when you do that." I said, "Yeah, I clean up pretty nice too, but I just leave the room covered with crap, and I just walk out and leave them all thinking about it." And it scares me because nobody's worried. Nobody's saving. The office got a big bonus, and they're all got it spent already on stuff. You know, nobody's even putting the bonus away.
Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die.
Well, they don't even go that far.
That's the thing. They don't get the merry part out of it.
It's just... I'm not being accusatory or critical of the offices, but this is just a little microcosm that I think is probably a big picture of a lot of society, and it just feels really frustrating to me. It's just pretty scary to me. Anyway, like I started out saying, I had a pretty international or cross-cultural week. I spent a week in a training seminar for resilience training put on by a secular Jew from Israel, from the northern part of Israel, and he was very interesting, and I had to get the air cleared out. The training was for crisis intervention training for first responders and people who deal with folks who are in immediate crisis, not kids.
case management, but so and then it was intertwined with self-care and how do we take care of ourselves in order to take care of, you know, the, and values clarification and that sort of, it was sort of typical, but he come at it from a kind of a different point of view that was kind of refreshing, and it fine-tuned some of my skills. But anyhow, I had to get it out of the way before the session, before it even started. I wove it into the conversation and to his presentation about, is there any attempt to take this into Lebanon and Syria and Palestine, into the Gaza Strip, to take when the people, your people aren't the only ones suffering, and I'm just wondering if there's any room to take this training into other places. And I was presented it not in that way, but just, I said, I just really need to get the air, I need to get clarification for my sake. And he said, yes, we've made attempts, and it was met with resistance by the politicians, and we even used NATO to get in, and they couldn't. And I said, you know, because I said, this isn't a black and white issue. You know, it's not the grandmas and the kids and the working people who are causing all the trouble. It's the religious and the religious people and the politicians, and my God can kick your God's ass, and everybody tittered and snickered. And
oh, everybody sang, my God's bigger than your God, my God's bigger than your God.
And he kind of smiled and said, well, yes, that is a big part of it, you know. So anyway.
Well, you know, it's interesting you mention all that, because I've got something coming up. I'll be away from the microphone a little bit next week. Because down at Cold River Mountain Watch, they are sponsoring an anti-racism training.
Mm.
And, you know, I'm really glad that they are, and I'm looking forward to it. I hope the weather holds and everything works out right, because it's not to say that there is not some diversity in the state, but for the most part, this is a very, very white state.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm proud of the fact that the folks I work with are very, very sensitive to these issues, but it never, ever hurts to actually sit down and confront these things and hear them talked about frankly in an open fashion and reassess one's own status.
Yeah, values clarification. That's exactly, and I think part of my reasoning was just to get the air cleared for my own self, because I went in there, I thought, yeah, freaking Jews, whatever, they're, you know, and then we're not going to hear any, and I got to clear this out. I got to get the air clear and get on with the training, because I've been sent here to cheat. It's a train the trainer thing, and I got to get something out of this, but I can't let my bigotry or my prejudice or whatever the hell it is when you have that attitude toward another people, another culture, who's got the same color skin, you know. I did it also for the purpose of giving some, helping the room get, I would suppose that there's probably two-thirds of the people in that room couldn't find Israel on a map. And so I thought I needed, or they've only heard one side of the story or the other.
Or they just know that's where the chosen people live?
Yeah, or whatever.
You know, the religion industry's little pet people.
Yeah, the Jews killed Jesus, or, you know, whatever. Just looking around the room, I had no idea who I was dealing with, and so I wanted to drop that rock in the bucket and let it splash out.
Well, you know, I know that for instance, Malloy has referred on a number of occasions. He said, you know, I'm a white guy, and I have to acknowledge that by virtue of just growing up in the society, there is some of that stuff that lays innate and dormant in me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's very, very honest, and you know,
absolutely.
And the only way to beat it is to drag it out into the light. Because you know, light, it's like, you know, with bigotry and prejudice and all of that, you shine light on it, and it withers like a vampire in the sunshine.
I'm feeling a bit vindicated. I got an email from somebody in the upper management place in Jackson or someplace that talked about, because My first deployment down here, I hadn't been here 4 days, and I looked around, and I said, wow, this sucks. This totally sucks. They're just letting Moss Point melt and run back into the bayou. I mean, the black people across over there, they're not getting
it. Well, look, I know it didn't capture a whole lot of attention, and, so, you know, political races are not necessarily what you focus on. But you can't look away from the elections that were held recently in Louisiana and not be struck by the shock of it. First of all, you know, William Jefferson said, who's got sort of ethical, political, criminal law problems, you know, money in bags and freezers.
Quite a few problems,
yeah.
and no job.
But ordinarily, he would have been reelected. Except for the fact that New Orleans has been ethnically cleansed.
It has.
That the pasty-faced, doughy people were able to get their own guy in there. And
but the delicious irony in that is that the guy is a Vietnamese American.
Yes. Yeah. That is a delicious irony. Yeah. I find it more ironic that he's Vietnamese American and Republican.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dude, the country you came from, the party that you're a member of, wishes it was still there blowing you up.
I did not understand, but I just thought it was delicious that.
And so, you're gonna love this. You're gonna get coffee. Don't drink your coffee. You'll snort. You know, John Boehner is the minority leader in the House.
Mm-hmm.
And now not a single Republican politician in Louisiana contributed so much as one thin dime to Mr. Cao. His name is Cao, C-A-O, to Mr. Cao's campaign. Not one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But now John Boehner, cries at a clear blue sky, that guy, cries for Wall Street bankers and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
He's put out a memo. I kid you not. I wish I was making this up, but I'm not. He put out a memo, John Boehner did, saying the Republican Party's future is Cao.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the future is now, the future is Cao. Isn't that catchy?
Mm-hmm. That's good.
Yeah, and now here's the second part of this delightful little diptych. Newt Gingrich has volunteered to be Mr. Cao's liaison to the African American community in his district.
There aren't many left, so Newt's not going to have a very big job.
Right, he just wants the paycheck.
Right. Yes, I follow that quite closely. I remember where I was at on the highway driving through Texas in the middle of the night, and heard the election results when Bobby got governor, and I thought, oh my God. God Almighty, oh Jesus, yeah, the South Asians are taking over.
And Bobby Jindal has come out and said, I have no intention of running for president in 2012. I don't want to be president in 2012.
Yeah.
Right. Because the Republicans are all, look, we got one, we got two of them, and from the same state. Somebody call the travel agent. We're going to have them all over this country. Look, we got some brown people in the party.
Yeah, we got the Mexicans are all building up New Orleans, and we got Mr. Chow is the and the Bobby is the other guy,
we're
multicultural.
You know, yeah, the Republicans is diverse now, and because you know for the most part their Latino contingent is all you know South Florida Cuban folk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of Mexicans there still doing volunteer work.
True.
They work all day and then don't get paid, and you know, and so it's still. And I've said this before. I've heard many people say in Louisiana, if it weren't for the Mexicans or if it weren't for the Latinos, this place would have never gotten rebuilt. And so don't even. And another guy. He had a white contractor over in Mississippi across the border just barely, and he'd messed up his daddy's house, and his daddy was a builder anyway, and he knew the guy. I mean, he was trying to, you know, you can't do it that way. You can't finally run him off, and hired a truckload of Mexicans to come in, and they built his house up just the way he wanted it, and it's beautiful, and he just loves it. And if it weren't, and he paid them good, and if it wouldn't have been for them, he'd still be living in his trailer. So it's you know, I mean, it's just goofy. And the motel that I stayed in, I chose to stay in Wave. I was in Bay St. Louis for the training, but I chose to stay in Waveland, about a mile away, just to keep it local and support somebody local instead of the big chains and stuff. And I went in, and the lady was signing me in, and finally I asked her, I said, it looks like you're doing a good job of rebuilding, because they had nice paint job and nice ceramic tile floors and stuff. And I said, how much water did she get? And she said, 7.5 feet. I said, oh, my God. And she said, I said, did you get any FEMA help? She said, nope, FEMA. No FEMA and no insurance, because I don't live in a floodplain, even though I got 7.5 feet of water. I didn't have insurance. I couldn't get an SBA loan. And I was just sick. I just wanted to go back home. And I said, where are you from? And she said, Bombay. And I said, oh, she said, but my family said, no, you must stay. We will come and help. So they brought money and labor, and the family built the motel back up. And I said, did any of your folks get hurt in Mumbai? And she said, no, everybody was fine. But she said, it certainly, if it had not been for my family, I wouldn't be here. And I said, now you kind of wish they'd all stay home some days. And she said, she's tired, because they're still working on the place. And I thought, how cool to have an Indian woman owning the motel, and then I'm going to the secular Jew guy to get this resilience training. I'm having a big week. But the racism thing, the email I got was that the NAACP and the Mississippi Center for Justice and several individuals have filed suit against HUD. Ooh, big time, big suit, because HUD evidently diverted about $600 million from the housing programs to do the Gulfport expansion, the port expansion in Gulfport. And we all just went nuts when that happened. And, I mean, you know, nobody's getting their grant money. Nobody's getting their debt. No, not everybody, it just got locked and frozen. But then all of a sudden, Gulfport's getting this new port expansion program going in. Well, HUD had diverted some of the, and they'd had approved waivers that suspended, that siphoned off funds from that, for that port improvement. And the original dollars designated, they were supposed to be about 50% of that was supposed to go to low to moderate income housing, for the low to moderate, which, you know, that
didn't.
Low to moderate income is African American.
Sure.
Elders and disabled. And this, all of the moving around of the money, it just allowed Mississippi to drop its commitment they were supposed to commit 50% of that money to this housing program. It dropped it from 50 to 13%. No wonder we're not getting any money.
Dear
client. Ew.
But realistically, what kind of justice can they expect, Kate?
Well, the port hasn't been expanded yet.
Oh, so,
yeah.
Do we know if the contracts have been let or anything?
Well, I don't know. But 65% of the storm damage, of the damage that was done on the coast, was about 65% of it was storm, and over 50% of it was wind damage to the housing, and that were all occupied by low to moderate income people. And the in this suit, they're quick to point out that the majority of those people living in that situation were elderly, disabled, low income, African American. So when I got down here about the fourth day, I said, it looks like they're leaving. Moss Point's just melting and running back into the bayou, and nobody's doing anything about it. And all the white folks were saying, I mean, when I would drop that sentence, they would say, oh, no, Miss Kate, that's Old South. It ain't like that no more. And I said, okay, whatever. And I turned to a black woman in the, I said, well, it's institutional racism. And, oh, no, it ain't, it just, you just don't know. You
no,
just,
they don't have no racism down there no more.
They don't, not no more.
We ain't, except for buying the electric cross for Christmas that's in the yard, we ain't burnt crosses down here in forever.
I
and that means there's no more racism. I'm not kidding.
That's, That's right. I mean, we haven't hung a Negro for I don't know how long. It's been a long time. And I turned to the black woman sitting over in the corner because I'd had some rapport with, and I said under my breath, there's no institutional racism in Mississippi. And she looked at me and grinned and shrugged and turned back to her computer. And I thought, oh, thank God. So I said to one of the sisters out in Moss Point, I had this conversation with her, and it got quite animated. And I said, they just want your black ass back. Go to Detroit or Chicago or something. And she said, mm-hmm, but I ain't leaving. So when I brought that up, that was way back.
And see, I've got a lot of sense of solidarity for that attitude. I ain't leaving.
Yeah. And she's one of the ones that I helped start the Few Good Women contractors who do their own building now because they were tired of waiting on him, the preacher and the husband and the brother and the uncle and the cousins and stuff. And I said, why don't we just do the thing ourselves? I mean, hanging fans and installing ceiling fans and electrical outlets and hanging doors and taping and mudding and, you know, and so, she's thinking, we ain't leaving.
Is this where I queue up sisters are doing it for themselves?
Hmm?
Is this where I queue up sisters are doing it for themselves?
I don't know.
You don't know that song? Okay, never mind.
I don't know. I like She's My Man. She's, what's it, Scissor Sisters? She's My Man. That's a good one. Ooh, dangerous.
Only on the horn do the callers get to DJ their own bumps.
Is this a request line? Anyway, that
it's dedication night, Kate.
She's My Man to the dedicated to the Few Good Women in Moss Point. The suit way down in the bottom of the article, the suit was really quick to point out that this is ethnic cleansing. And it's time that we don't pull the rug back over the stain of racism. And I'm just going, yes! I've been saying this since I got here, and now the NAACP and the Mississippi Center for Justice are finally bringing it out, and it's right out on the front page of the paper on WLOX or whatever. Anyway, I just thought, you mentioned racism, and I thought, yeah, they're starting, finally somebody's saying it out loud. Ethnic cleansing, you betcha. You betcha, uh-huh, sure.
And that's a trait that the people who work against community and who work against our attempts to defeat these old hateful bigotries, they all have that in common. Whether it's Don Blankenstein trying to ethnically cleanse southern West Virginia of hillbillies,
mm-hmm.
or whether it's casinos and the various and sundry assorted forces of racism trying to do what we've been trying to do for 140 years now. And we set them free. Why couldn't they leave?
Yeah. Katrina.
Bring me a mint julep.
We've been trying to get, but Katrina finally took down those projects. Speaking of cultural diversity, this is where I need my cultural, some more cross-training today. I walked in this morning, and on the desk, not my desk this morning, but another one off in the corner, was this piece of paper that says glorified grits. And I looked at it and I thought, I wonder if you can put sugar on them. No, I promise I wouldn't do that. And the recipe reads, and I need some help here from y'all who know about these things. I'm wondering, what the hell would this taste like? It says one box of Jim Dandy Quick Grits.
A whole box?
One box.
Who are you feeding?
I don't know. It was just laying there.
That's like grits for an army.
1 8-ounce Velveeta, 1 stick of butter, 1 can of mild R-O-T-E-L.
Rotel. Oh, yeah. Oh, this is going to be good.
And 1 pound of ground sausage.
Now it says, you've gotten me in all the painful places, Kate. You got the Velveeta, the butter, the Rotel. The Rotel's good for you, actually. And the sausage. Oh!
Okay, tell me what Rotel is first.
Okay, Rotel is, it comes in a can, and it is diced tomatoes and chopped, relatively moderately spicy green chilies in liquid. And
it's like salsa in a tin can?
It's not really salsa, though. It's just tomatoes and green chilies.
Okay.
And in fact, you know, one of the things that landed my butt in the emergency room was my willingness to mainline Velveeta melted with Rotel.
Oh, okay. Well, okay. Yeah,
straight out of the jar.
Going on, it says cook the entire box of grits per directions on the box. And then it says brown the sausage. This can be done the night before. And then cut up the cheese into cubes. And then drain off one half the juice off the Rotel. And once the grits are cooked, put all the ingredients in a pot, cover for 10 minutes, then come back and stir together. Done. And I thought, I guess you don't put sugar on that, but if I knew what Rotel was, I would certainly have some better sense.
Most grocery stores have a store brand, but I tell you, if you've got a family or a Dollar General down there, you can get your Rotel a whole lot cheaper than if you buy it in the grocery store.
Okay.
It'll run as much as $1.75 a can in the grocery store. You get it for maybe $1 at Dollar General.
Well, okay, so this is glorified grits because it's got Velveeta, butter, Rotel, and sausage in it?
Well, it's the Rotel and the sausage, I think, that really gives it the glorification.
Oh, okay.
But I'm lost here, though, because how much Velveeta again?
1 8-ounce Velveeta.
Okay, and how much Rotel?
1 can.
See,
1 pound
you put, the, I mean, the, somebody else can take me to task for this, but with one whole box of Jim Dandy brand grits or anybody else's grits, you're not going to know there's anything in it. I'm not kidding. One box of grits makes a bunch of grits. I mean, I should have this committed to memory by now. But I think it's what? 3 or 4, maybe 5, 6 cups of water to 2 cups of grits, something like that?
It does say 1 box medium size, a middle size, so it must be the, I don't know. Anyway, I just want to know what made this glorified and what the hell is Rotel.
Oh, it's going to be some kind of yummy. It'll be thick and it'll be creamy and...
I don't want to even go there. It hurts my stomach just looking at it.
You've got the chat room lit up. Let's see. Peter wants to know how much cheese. That's
8 ounces of cubed Velveeta.
1 8-ounce brick. 1 8-ounce brick. What I'd do is I'd make usually the grits box, Kate, has numbers of servings.
Right.
I'd make the middle one, which is like 6 servings.
That's
and then good. I'd put the sausage in the Rotel, and that should be, oh yeah, the room going nuts. I want some, damn it. Sounds like a keeper to me. Do we drain the Rotel? See, I disagree with that, Kate. That says to drain half the liquid off. Don't drain the Rotel.
Okay.
Or better yet, if you want to drain the Rotel, replace some of the water for cooking the grits with the Rotel liquid.
Oh well, okay.
See, I got real hardcore. We've got one of those little electric steamers, and I just love it. You know, you can do rice, vegetables, whatever in it.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no greater heresy on earth than lumps in grits or cream of wheat.
Oh, really?
Oh, God. Oh. Lumpy.
Oh.
Yeah. It's just me.
I kind of like lumpy potato, mashed potatoes and lumpy.
No, lumpy mashed potatoes, God wants them to be lumpy. That's why they start with potatoes.
Well, I know.
But I found out that in my little electric steamer.
Who'd argue about lumpy mashed potatoes?
Well, you know, my dad liked lumps in his gravy. You know, I know people for whom that's a killing offense.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that, how can you not have lumps in your gravy when you do that iron skillet fried chicken thing and you scrape from the bottom and you get all those wonderful carbon's good for you sometimes, and that's one of them.
Mm-hmm. That's food porn.
Yeah.
Just quit it. Just get on out of here.
But seriously, I've got an electric steamer, and that I found out if you really want unlumpy grits and unlumpy cream of wheat or Ralston or whatever, you make it in the steamer, in the rice bowl, and you will not have the first lump, and it is wonderful.
Okay, I've never done anything but brown rice in my little rice cooker, so you're not talking about a rice cooker, are you?
Yeah. Well, it's a steamer. Yeah. There's a basket you use for steaming, and then you take away
No, I don't happen.
But it's got a, well, no, you've got a, is it an electric rice cooker?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Just put your grit, just put your grits where you put the rice and the liquid.
Okay. How cool.
Yeah. And it is absolutely yummy. But one stick of butter jumping. Jehoshaphat. I mean,
well, this is Mississippi. I'm telling you, I don't even, you never know what's going to happen in this office. We got probably the same person.
Well, I mean, I'm sorry, but if I was writing that recipe, I'd call it grits a la triglyceride.
Yeah, the person who's got the Blackwater cups, probably the one who's got the grits recipe. I don't know.
My gallbladder's hurting just thinking about this. Yeah. But my taste buds are sitting there going, make it, Bob, make it, Bob, make it, Bob.
Right.
Do you know how long it's been since I had Velveeta?
Oh, probably a long time since the last time you
April?
Your died. Yeah,
April.
Long time. I was still in Arizona when
I had my, you know, I had my follow up appointment just the other day with the gastroenterologist, and he looked at me and he said, "No cheese, no fat."
Oh yeah. And you said, "I don't."
And I just looked at him and said, "I mean this." I said, all right.
Did he mean that you had been eating cheese and fat, or is he saying, oh, the test results are excellent?
No, he means if I don't ever want that to happen to me again.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we knew that. Okay. You can't even chip away at it. You just have to rethink your life, you know, whatever.
But, you know, I'm going to have blood work done next week. And if it makes it to the centrifuge without having a layer of lard rise to the top, I'll know that I'm winning.
You know you're winning. I wanted to not go on for 45 or an hour 20 because other people need to call in, and this other people, we've lost the interest of half of the audience.
No, you have not. Are you kidding? You should. There was a damn riot in the chat room over the spectacular grits. What are you talking about?
Glorified, you guys, get it right. I don't stutter. I talk funny, but I don't
glorified stutter. Well, oh, and okay, one more. You want to make it extra fun?
Huh?
Replace the sausage with some gently fried bacon so it's still tender enough that you can chop it real good. Replace it with that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, oh, here's where it gets really hinky and kinky. After you've mixed it all together and it's supposedly done,
mm-hmm.
Then beat a couple of eggs, all right?
Oh, God, we're going to go to the eggs and the butter and the iron skillet. Oh, my God.
No, we're not. Kate, off the ledge. You beat a couple of eggs, and then you slowly, with the hot grits mixture, you temper it into the eggs so that they won't scramble. Then you pour it all back in, work it all back in together, and bake it.
Oh.
Bake it for, 30 minutes or so, and it'll puff like a souffle.
Oh.
And it'll be all airy and light inside. I made something similar a couple of weeks ago. Pulled it out of the oven long enough to cool. I went back in to serve it, and it was gone.
Oh, sure.
the little flock of locusts that are my family. And, you know, I went, who did it? And they're all sitting there going, oh, my hands are burning. Yeah.
If I made this, I may as well just not even bother. I would just open up my jeans pockets in the front of my, just pour it all down into my britches and let it all go to my hips and my waist. And
well, the way my family did reminded me of that wonderful line from, you know, our patron saint, Jimmy Buffett, who wrote, the coffee is strong at the Café du Monde, and the donuts are too hot to touch. Just like a fool, when those sweet goodies cool, I eat till I eat way too much.
Oh, I forgot that part. I was at Café du Monde just last Monday.
Rub it in.
I ate until I ate too much, and then I went back and ate some more and got some to go, and I come home. I had two great big cups of coffee at different times.
I have not made beignets in forever. Now I think I have to.
It was 45 or 50 degrees in New Orleans, and we were in the quarter. We went to get my friend's sister from the airport, and we had time to just walk around, and she had to chop for Christmas. And I said, my only agenda, well, what do you want to do? What do you want? I said, my only agenda is the Café du Monde. That's all. And that's all I want to do. So we went and found this wonderful little place to eat, and we got a big platter of seafood. It was in a family restaurant on the corner that's only been there a year. And we ate until I had to take it home in a box. And then we shopped and walked and shopped in the cold, and she's freezing her butt off. And we went over and got beignets, and the man had the telescope set up in front of the Café du Monde, and we got to watch the Jupiter and Venus and the moon, that configuration that night, and got to see the craters on the moon, and it was very cool. And went in and got the beignets and some coffee, and then went back and got some more, and they're only $1.89 for three, so I got another bag and put them in my backpack and took them home. The next morning I ate them cold, and they were wonderful.
by the way, I'm getting a clarification in. Glorified grits is a side dish.
Oh, dear.
Side dish, Bob, to go along with the country ham and the spoon eggs and the cat heads.
Not the spoon eggs, oh, please.
Redneck brunch at its finest.
A side dish. Yeah, I put that right on this side, on this left side, and then right on the left side. Oh, God. Well, it's really, I don't know any other culture that can make pornography out of a box chopped up corn.
Oh, God, it's grand. It's grand. And here I was thinking I was going to get done tonight at 9 o'clock, and I promised, since the kids don't have school tomorrow, mm-hmm. it'd be insanity and all. I figured that I'd go into the kitchen, and I promised them a late dinner, and I was gonna whomp up a bunch of enchiladas.
Oh, okay.
And suddenly they're just not sounding nearly as appealing as they were a little bit ago. I want me some glorified dang grits.
And I'm not even gonna that sausage. I guess you don't use that kind of sausage that I mispronounced that drives you crazy, whatever.
Kaneka? Oh, you could use Kaneka, and it would be heaven on earth.
Sausage.
You'd just be glad you're not within reaching distance.
Yeah, I did that.
I don't carry water for blasphemy in many instances, but that's one of them.
Well, I just wanted to, had no idea where we were going to take this, fly around the room with this.
Well, it was darn sure fun, Kate. I don't hear from you enough, and we have a blast when we do.
I just want to entreat people to get off of their couch and get out from their warm blankets and go off in the back porch and look at the big moon, because it's the brightest and closest that it will in the past 15 years. It hasn't been so big or so bright or so close for the last 15 years.
And it might even shine through my clouds here. But
and it won't be this big, this bright until I think it's probably November of 14, I think it is. And also we're having a meteor shower for the next three nights. So.
Wow. What are these, the Perseids?
Geminids.
The Geminids. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah,
wonderful.
Yeah. So,
I've got your bumper music all fired up, and get back to where you can hear.
Just be sitting right here waiting. Thank you for the
Sun to come through the skylight. Yes, indeed.
This is Oh my God, the moon! I just turned around, and looked outside. Oh, it's like huge and beautiful. So thank you for the cultural diversity and the lessons in the culinary whatever. And I just never look at grits again without thinking about pornography.
They something mighty wonderful.
Y'all take care.
Bye now.
Bye.
I'm a little dry, and I'm gonna refill the grape juice. It really is grape juice. It's not like what the Southern Baptists tell you about wine. No, it's real grape juice. It's trying to do the right thing. So I'm gonna take a little break, and this is the only talk radio network where you get to call your own bumper. So here you go, Kate, from Scissor Sisters.
Some girls wanna hold
Well, Dick, it had a great rhythm, and we could dance to it. I'll give it a 5. Welcome back to this Friday evening edition of Head On. We're going to keep the phones hotted. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
Hey, Luke, what's happening, man?
Well, now my suggestion is when you get done, you open up a nice can of Chow Chow.
Oh, there's an, yeah, that's a, you know what, it's hard to find good, though.
Well, most of the best you find out is homemade, generally.
Absolutely, and, our buddy Nanette has a killer Chow Chow recipe, because it's made out of whatever happens to be left in the garden.
Oh, yeah, I mean, there's 3 or 4 things you can have, but you can add whatever you really want to into it.
I ran across something that was a pretty close, not close, but a pretty tolerable second. A brand called Marzetta, Marzetta, and it's just a red pepper relish.
Huh.
And it comes darn close to being Chow Chow, and it's mighty good. And cheap, too, $1.88 a jar.
Well, let's get on to something else, because yep. We can talk about food all night.
Yeah, set them up and knock them down, Luke.
Well, I was going to say, when you get done, maybe later in the night, maybe you ought to dig up Buffett's I'll Play for Gumbo.
Yeah, that worked. Oh, I hadn't made gumbo in a while, neither.
Mm-hmm. I pulled up the thing on Sizzik about that thing, and you know most people don't know it because we don't cover it. But you know he's been, they've been after him for a while. I mean, Dobson was after him a couple of years ago when he started talking about the environmental movement. What did Dobson try to get him fired a couple of years ago?
Yeah, exactly. And I guess this was. Well, no, the article I read said, well, this was the straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's been after him for a while, you know, because he thinks he ain't right enough a Republican, apparently.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing on some of this is you can see how all this is going, you know. It's like we were talking about a while back, talking about the thing about, here you have Vitter out talking about the marriage amendment. You're sitting there going, you couldn't find anybody better than Vitter to come out and talk about marriage.
Well, and now he stands up on the auto bridge loan bailout, whatever. And this man has the nerve to stand up in the Senate and refer to something as being ass backward.
I wrote Dana Milbank yesterday on his Washington sketch, and I asked him, how much did you pay for him to do that? Because I mean, that'll pay off for months, you know.
Diaper David Vitter.
I mean, somebody in his office, if he had this written down in a speech, they should have tackled him.
Well, see, I take
you can't say that.
I take offense at that personally, Luke, because you know, as I recently found out, I am ass backwards, really, literally, inside me, absolutely. Me and 2%, 0.2% of the rest of the world's population. So you know, I don't appreciate David Vitter making fun of me.
But you know, I mean, here you have a Republican Party that uses him and Newt Gingrich to talk about marital fidelity. I'm sitting there going, you know, somewhere Jay Leno or somebody's down on his knees going, thank you, comedy God, thank you, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, you were talking about that thing earlier. We talked about it the other day. I saw, you know, the thing in Gene Lyons' thing this week where he was talking about, you know, essentially was asking, you know, Charlie Gibson, what were you doing during that interview when George Bush came up and swore that we had to tax the Dom because he wouldn't let them inspectors in. And I still remember, you know, I say Hans Blick on the TV talking to CNN or somebody in Iraq saying we just need a couple more weeks and we'll have these inspections finished. You know, when they ordered him out.
Right, exactly.
They said that we need like 2-3 more weeks and we'll have them all complete.
See, that calls something into question, Luke, and that is, you know, how much, really, what did George know and when did he know it, if ever? I mean, did nobody tell him that the inspectors went in, or does he just think the American people are that stupid?
Well, both, and probably Cheney was telling him, oh, no, no one's going in, no, no. Of course, these are the same people. You remember, I think the name that you should always bring up whenever they start talking about this is everybody just starts saying the word, curveball, curveball, curveball. You took advice from an informant that every other major power in Europe said, don't listen to this guy, he's a drunk at best. So he'll make up whatever you want to have him make up for you. I guess that's why they picked him, but hey.
Yeah, the boys over the under the Euphrates Bridge with the screw top wine.
Oh, you see the thing today that apparently, was it up in Minnesota, talk about the people up in Michigan, the people over in Minnesota, apparently they, the Frank and Coleman race is getting fun because the board up there said, we're going to allow those disputed, what was it, absentee ballots. Some of them are in, and apparently Coleman and them are already saying they're going to court.
Oh, God. Well, yeah, it's looking better and better for Al Franken up there. Hey, I know how much you love life support system for a haircut, Sean Hannity.
Oh, God.
Did you hear about what Jon Stewart did to him in light of Combs' leaving the show?
Oh, the Hall & Oates thing?
This is too precious. We have to share this, Luke. This is a top 40 classic.
Jon Stewart has a trifecta going this week between that and then having Brother Huckabee on there and cutting him into little pieces. That from now on should be the favorite thing when anybody brings up the thing about it being a choice. Any one of these reverends that does it has been saying, "When did you make the choice, sir?"
I know. We got to let people hear this, Luke. This is beautiful. Just the setup. Jon Stewart said he did not have the words to describe his feelings about Alan Combs leaving Sean Hannity. And so he got Hall & Oates to come out. Reunion, man.
Yeah.
And they're looking a little older, but, they're still, but they rewrote the whole lyric to She's Gone, which is precious in its own right.
There's one other bit of business that I would be remiss if I didn't mention. It's actually far sadder than the spectacle of a state being held hostage by its governor or the dissolution of our national industry. I'm talking, of course, about Alan Combs. The man who single-handedly put the Combs in Hannity and Combs is leaving that program at the end of the year. Now, for Combs, it has been no easy task being the sole liberal voice on the Fox network. But through all the tough times, Alan Combs always had one thing to lean on, the respect he earned from his colleagues.
He's got more lobbyists than any other candidate around.
Alan, please. You're just embarrassing yourself.
I've got a really good idea. How about I get to answer, then you get to respond.
Right. Okay,
great.
That was the question.
You know, you're just talking through your hat, Alan.
No, I'm talking through a microphone for those who didn't.
Jesus. Oh, poor man. Poor man.
Oh, but like I say this week was Jon Stewart just was on fire.
Oh, he ate poor Huckstrebe alive.
Oh, that was fun. I enjoyed watching that. Oh,
when did you choose to be straight? What a great moment! And that's that's the question that somebody needs to ask Dobson and the rest of those freaks. Yeah, when
every time they bring it up, that should be the first response out of the other person's mouth. What day did you make your choice? And what drove you to that choice?
I know. John Fox and I actually parodied Hall & Oates once upon a time. And it's glad to see. I'm glad to see. No, we never quite got around to having it produced. We did one with Maneater back when McCain got busted for his shenanigans with the lobbyist.
Have we heard any new epiphanies from Joe, almost the plumber?
Apart from the fact that he wanted to leave the bus?
I figure if they could have opened the door, we could have just
thrown him under it. The one guy that didn't get thrown under the bus that so desperately needed to be. I know.
Well, but you were talking, though, about the religion industry, and that's what it is. Isn't it amazing, though, how you do notice, except for Governor Palin, none of the young people are running up to kiss Jerry Falwell's ring, or Pat Robertson's ring. Excuse me, I forgot Jerry's gone now.
He's gone, but the son remains. It's
true. But none of them are running up to embrace the old right wing of the religion industry. But some of the new ones, like Jindal and all these, they're kind of going, I don't want to be associated with these people.
And can you blame him? I mean, it's like what I mentioned about that poor guy Cal. How he ever became a Republican, I'll never know, Luke.
It's like, we didn't give you a penny, but we supported you every inch of the way. Don't you worry about that. Yeah, but I say it's one of those things where it's fun right now watching the GOP and the right wing religion industry, how they're trying to cull out. If you watch it, the moderate ring part of their party. You know, the part that ain't following.
Well, that's what Huckstery's been saying. We got to get away from the squishy middle.
I mean, and that's part of the thing with Sizek. I mean, they're cutting him out, you know, because he actually might think, you know, maybe we can talk about this. You want to talk to him, you get out of here and talk to him, because you ain't part of us no more.
You ain't talking for us, you big old heretic.
That's the way it's going to be. And like I say, you know, we talked about this, you know, right after the election, you know, when they had the group got together, I think it was down in Florida or South Carolina, and decided, well, we didn't win because we weren't right-wing enough. We weren't far enough to the right.
We weren't nuts enough.
Yeah, I was going to say, please, yes, keep talking.
But they won everywhere that nuts plays. You know, they won big in Alabama. You know, John McCain got more votes than John Kerry did, for heaven's sakes.
I know. Well, that's what I mean, though. But they're walking themselves out on a plank, we hope.
We hope. And frankly, you know, if we let go of this and see, if we let go of this, the business with GM and Chrysler and Ford, we're screwing ourselves. Harry Reid, you know, he had 52 votes in favor. If John Kerry and Joe Biden and one other Democrat had been there, he would have had 55. I forget who the other one was. So I'm really getting to this, but I'm not going to have any tolerance for putting up with these repig licking shenanigans, Luke.
Well, but you know, it's like, I can't think of what was on before. Well, saying, you know, said, what's going to happen when the parts distributors go out of business? Because, by the way, without GM and Chrysler and Ford, we can't stay in business. So when we go out, your side that loves this, well, you all don't get any spare parts either.
And are they just dumb?
Well, yes, that's always been the case, but like I say, that ain't think it just affects those three groups. No. Like I say, this is dominoes, and it hits about 20 other dominoes. And once that starts, they ain't gonna be able to stop. It's the problem. If you know when they figure out, we can't have that. We have to stop this. Too late. I'm sorry. Once it gets started, like I say, it's gonna be just, you know, one's gonna, if one of them falls before GM or Chrysler, and if it's GM first.
If it's GM Chrysler, first, it's Chrysler, party over.
Well, that's what I mean. But if it takes GM, they're going to take down Chrysler's going to fall right behind them, and Ford's going to be looking around going, who, me next? Me? And I tell you what, I hope somebody does it. I saw CNN had the thing in their interactive map showing the number of auto workers. I would love somebody to do the thing and show Shelby and Corker and all these, and show how much money they've gotten for, and I'm not against Honda and Toyota and all that.
No, but Ron Gettelfinger, the president of the UAW, laid that stuff out. You know what? 300 and some odd million dollars in tax breaks for Mercedes-Benz to come to Alabama, and God knows how many millions for BMW to go to South Carolina, and on and on and on.
Go to the Chattanooga Times and read the deals that the Volkswagen is getting to come to Chattanooga.
And of course, you know, you're the senator you love most to hate is being hailed as a rising star now. Bob Corker.
Jungle Drums Corker, yes, indeedy.
Yeah. Bob, call me. But, you know,
commercial should always be played, just to remind people who this is.
I read a lot last night after the show was over, and the only thing that kept the markets from taking an absolute nosedive was the White House coming in saying, well, the Senate won't do it, we'll do it ourselves.
Yeah, you know, because I think somebody in the Treasury group or whatever went to them and said, "You can't let this happen. We don't care what you have to do. You cannot let this happen." It's like if you have to stick your finger in John Boehner's eye or whatever, Mitch McConnell, you do not let this happen.
Well, this couldn't be any more plainly union busting if it was just labeled that way.
I know. Well, the fun part is that George Bush may actually come to the rescue. This could be fun to watch. If he actually has to dig in and give them money that the Republicans say, no, you can't. He'll go, yes, I can. And we can sit back and just watch it and let go.
And the story that I was reading from the Associated Press last night has already been disappeared and replaced with something new and different. But there was language in that story that made it abundantly clear that this gang of weirdos, these Republicans, were doing this solely for partisan political purposes. And in fact, here in about 45 minutes, we're going to have the executive director of the Change to Win Coalition on the program to talk about some of this.
Just a momentary thing before I totally forget it, before it gets out of my head. I saw tonight, I believe, on Mr. Moyers, he has Mr. Greenwald on.
Oh, really?
We're discussing Mr. Bush and his legacy. So that should be an interesting thing to listen to.
And, well, it should be. It should be indeed. Legacy. The thing that killed me, though, was Cheney. You know, when Cheney and when George Voinovich of Ohio, when George Voinovich comes out and says they're going to call him George Herbert Hoover Bush if he doesn't do something. You know, that may be the one thing that got through to him.
Well, you know, I was sitting today and looking at Alternate. It has the thing about the political most outrageous media comments in 2008. And I've been reading a couple things going back and looking at stories from the last 8 years. And there's a lot of stories we've all forgotten that we need to go back and reread and remember. Oh, yeah, that's why. Like you say, the thing with Voinovich, I mean, that was a few years ago. You remember when they tried to almost throw him out of the party?
Right.
You know, and they've done things that a lot of people have unfortunately fallen down our memory hole because they've done something worse the next
day. You can't keep, honest to God, it would be a PhD doctoral dissertation if you actually were able to keep up with all of this garbage.
It's like I'm sure somebody down the line is going to put out a book, maybe a Michael Moore or Eric Altman or somebody, and go through the media and Bush and all this stuff and just recount this last 8 years and go, do y'all remember this?
Oh, and speaking of wasted money, did you notice where Phil is getting paid to be a consultant to the president of the University of Tennessee?
No, he's not. He refused it.
Oh, he did. Okay. Thank heaven. The last I saw was, a day or so ago.
Yeah, there was a new one on it where apparently Phil figured out that was not going to be a good thing, and he said no. He said, thank you, but no.
I had a note from our buddy David in South Carolina about the critical mass that the university there is reaching.
Oh, they're wondering whether or not the Brother Visor we'll finally give it up, because, like I say, he just barely hadn't been able to do it with the group he's got down there now.
Yeah, but I mean, they can't. He'd have to walk away. There's no way that, I mean, I don't think South Carolina could afford the buyout.
I was going to say, I don't even want to think what his buyout is, because when Spurrier came there, it's just amazing what they gave him.
Meanwhile, Muschamp was, he's coming, he ain't coming down at Auburn. I guess one of the sticking points might have been that he wanted to answer directly to the university president, just like Nick Satan.
Yep, and like I say, we haven't even heard anything out of the Mississippi State thing, you know, since that happened. That's been kind of quiet. I mean, I just haven't read in the right places. But, it's like either you're doing great this year or you're doing lousy this year, because I am glad to see that, was it Houston got his, I don't know what they get, if they gave an extension or what down at Mississippi.
Yeah, Ole Miss. Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll see how it winds up. Like I say, it's one of them things. It's just an adventure unto itself.
Well, I just wouldn't want to be Auburn out there looking for a coach right now. This is offensive. Paying a football coach $2 or $3 million a year to coach a college football team is as nasty as that. Who was he? The Merrill Lynch guy that wanted his $10.9 million bonus, hell or high water.
Well, I saw it. Was it Auburn? Who was after Holtz over at ECU?
Oh, I thought Syracuse was interviewing him.
It was somebody was after him. I can't remember who it was, and he essentially said, no, thank you. So, I mean, there ain't that many choices out there. So.
No, they're going to wind up, they're not even going to get I got a feeling they're not even going to get somebody with head coaching experience.
Yeah. All right, Bob. Let me
have a great weekend, Luke.
Everybody on you can.
All right. Thanks a lot.
See you.
Bye now. In East Tennessee, our buddy Luke. Let's go back just for a minute, just for the absolute giggle factor of it. We got to hear this. The Hall & Oates appearance on the Daily Show. This is too precious not to.
Anytime you you need a token liberal. Nothing body, body, body to fill my chair. The better shadow of a person. Alan Combs, always there. All these years of non-existence.
Oh, and the life support system for a haircut, Sean Hannity, is indeed the ass we all expected him to be. He responded to getting that needle jabbed into the soft and fleshy by saying, "I was actually thinking of Jon Stewart as a co-host, but I needed someone who could be smart and funny without 50 writers and two has-been rockers who are badly in need of Botox." Oh, my. Saucer of milk for the Fox table, please. Yeah. And seriously, we will be talking here at the bottom of the coming hour with Chris Chafe, who is the executive director of the Change to Win Coalition. And I'm looking forward to it. I hope you are as well. We'll wrap up the program that way this evening. And he's not pulling any punches, Mr. Chafe. So I encourage you to stick around for that. For now, however, we will go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
How are you doing?
Hey, Bob, what's up?
Well, I just had to. Oh, my goodness. I had to jump in here and tell you a wonderful tale.
Okay.
Of a young man on his way to a scholarship.
Hmm? Okay.
The dude, he's a 4.0.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah?
It's yeah.
Interesting. But it is of no interest.
What? What do you mean, Bob?
If children, if our children, yours, mine, everybody's, ascribe to thought before action, it's of no interest to corporations or to a corporate greedy. Yeah, they don't want smart people. They want what? Dumb?
Obedient little, yeah.
Frogs.
Automatons.
They don't want people that ascribe to scholarship, do they? It's like Susan says, huh? That dear woman, I love her thoughts. Because she's ahead of the curve. Just like William and your dear daughter and every one of our children wish and hope and want to get there, but who is holding them back, Bob? Is it us? Is it you? Do you hold your child back and say, be dumb?
No, we pretty much battle that on a 24/7 basis around here.
See, and that's the only thing I want to. I'm not asking much. Just please understand.
true. And, you know, that's one of the things where you have to sort of wait for the next 38 days, 16 hours, and a minute to find out. I have confidence that some of these things will be rectified, but they're going to take time. But, you know, the last there's 8 years of a mess to be undone, Bob, and one of those messes has been the farming out of things like student loans to turn it into a profit center for these banks that couldn't even manage with those.
Bob, truth. We talk truth here on the Head On Radio Network.
We do to the best of our abilities.
Once in a while, we bump heads. We don't agree because, hey, have you ever put two Democrats in a room and asked them?
And you get three opinions.
Yeah, three opinions.
That's I'm actually taking that off of one of Mark Levine's old jokes. He said, yeah, get.
But the thing is, Bob, we have children of this earth that need, and we, the parents of this earth, need to provide them with some kind of guidance. I don't know if I'm able to give guidance to anybody. I can't guide you. The only thing I can say to you, son, is this. Be true to your nature, what is in your heart, what's in your soul, and that's...
Well, Bob, tell me who's off to college with the 4.0?
William.
Wow, has he chosen his school?
No, we're not. It's gonna be here in the great place up here on this.
North Dakota State's a fine university.
Huh? North Dakota State is going to be his. Alma mater, I suppose. Hey,
they are the bison, are they not?
Yeah, well.
You want to know how I know that?
The Sioux, huh?
I thought it was the North Dakota State Bison.
Yeah, well, they changed it.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, politically, yeah.
You know, hey, political. Hey, yeah. That was some of this state crap.
Well, but you know how
Fighting Sioux, Bob. We have been the Fighting Sioux on this nation, not your nation.
Well, would you like to know that? Because I would think it's rather unlikely that I would know much about North Dakota State, but guess how I know?
Why?
I watched them drag the University of North Alabama up and down the football field in the Division II National Championship, which is hosted down where I was raised.
Bob, where?
And it was a righteous butt beating, I got to tell you.
This is a scholarly school. It is not one that just goes on the Big Ten.
Oh no! It's Division II. They've got their ducks in a row and their priorities in order.
We raise children with brains, not brawn. I taught my children: stay out of fights you don't need to get into. Get into fights where you think you have to, and just kick ass when you. Just don't know if you can't get out of the damn fight, just kick ass, okay? You don't know it. You really don't. Because you ain't been in a real fight, Bob. You're just doing it because everybody tells you to. Well, you think you have to. But God dang it, and I didn't say the bad word. I'm just saying, gosh dang it, people. Please, if you need to get into a fight, get into it, and get into it. But don't do it just because everybody is playing a game. I watch them closely. I've been inside, and you haven't. But I watch them from inside and out, and I do what I do because I know how to. But it's not that, Bob. Never has been. It's been... It always has been. It can't be anything else. Either you care or you care about yourself. And I care about you. And come the first of the year, because, you know, I give that Nova AM some money every first. will match the lab because I figured you're a better channel, but they earned it. You have.
Well, I don't like to think in terms of better or worse. I don't sense the competition, Bob. But we will certainly gladly accept any help you choose to send our way. Because it's been tough and it's been pretty thin lately. And even with the heroic efforts of our handful of diehard subscribers and unlooked for contributions, it's we're standing on the brink.
Well, so am I, but hey, you get your 110. Okay. NovaM gets $100 a year, okay?
Okay.
Because that's what they got. You know, you'd be a NovaM founder, you send $100 a year in, right? I'll do that shortly. But for the Bob Kincaid show, no, it's the Bob Kincaid show. I mean, you know, you are the show, and you're it.
Well, Bob, thanks, but no, there's other people here that make it all happen too, and I can't take sole credit.
There's John Fox down there,
and Mark Levine, and Guy James out there. Well, I tell you what, if you choose to do that, I will make sure that some of it also goes to help out Guy James.
$10 more. I'll send you $110 just shortly here. And it will be my Christmas present to the head of Radio Network. And please understand, Glenda loves Agnes. She does.
I know.
And Agnes loves Glenda.
You would be surprised. I don't know. Maybe you wouldn't be. But you might be surprised to know how often we think of you and because. And Glenda, this is all a big, beautiful family that has happened here, I hope people know.
I know. I take your show and I turn them into DVDs and I drop them off. What do they call that? Them things that the Hansel and Gretel used to drop behind them out of the dark forest. Into the dark forest, breadcrumbs.
Yeah.
Some listen.
Just to find our way out.
Some listen, and some don't. But Bob, I listen. I listen to you. I listen to Randy Rhoads. I listen to Mike Malloy. I listen to John Levine. I listen to Mike
Mark Levine. Yeah, and John Fox.
Mark, I go on and on and on, but I don't feel like I've gotten anything through to anybody. I know how much you mean to me. I know how much I care about you as a person, but I've never sat down with her, had a cup of coffee with her, shared some bacon and eggs across the damn table with her in the morning. But I care about you because you speak truth to power. You talk about that Massey or whatever that hell his name is down there that tears the tops off the hills and turns them into rubble and throws poison into the valleys. I know how much you fight against it, and I love you for it, because you fight against injustice. That's what you fight against. You don't fight against me. Sometimes you don't like me much. Well, hell, I don't like you much either.
You're overreaching. We haven't gotten there.
I do listen to you. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
True. Bob, if you met me in person, you wouldn't like me much because I'm not a nice guy and I'm not easy to get along with.
Nah, stop it, Bob. No, that's not. Hey, you know, you can't make that judgment because you know, I'm pretty obnoxious in my own right. Just ask Agnes.
No doubt, that's what I'm talking about, Bob. That's what I'm talking about. Kind of like what that Bill O'Reilly guy says. Bill O'Reilly guy says that's what I'm talking about. I am not easy to get along with, but I am this. Truthful and faithful. I will not. I'll back down if you're in the kitchen, okay, cooking the soup or whatever you threw in the pot, okay. I will back down and let you cook it, okay. I'll taste it later, okay. But the truth is, I'll let you do your thing. And you can present it to me, and I will not denigrate you. I will not put you down until you show me what you got. And I'll show you what I got.
I understand. Hey, Bob, we got to get this interview going here in just a couple of just a few minutes here. So, all right, you keep listening, and we'll keep bringing it. All right.
All right, but hey. Give Agnes this message from Glenda and I.
Okay.
William is a scrape. 4.0. That's no.
You tell William that we're both so proud of him we could just bust him and him right. Getting that 4.0. You know what he's going to study?
Agnes asked me this question. Okay. You got to ask her about this. Okay. We got to put these two together. You know. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, Bob. We will work on it further, and just tell him we're proud of him. We're awful proud of him. All right.
Hey, you ain't as proud of him as I am, but I know you care, and that's important. Thank you, my friend. I'll speak to you again.
Okay. Great weekend to you, and hey to Glenda. Our buddy Bob up on the High Plains of North Dakota. I checked the website of North Dakota State University, and they got a weather advisory going on up there. It looks like winter has actually come. Listen, we're going to take a quick break and come back thereafter. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is America's liberal voice. This is, after all, the Horn. World.
We have a Florida family who are really pioneers in a brave new world. They have volunteered to be the first ever to have microchip identification devices implanted into their body.
We're not. having something planted permanently in my arm that would identify.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention
$24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Brock.
Okay, so tonight's final 40 minutes of Head On begin now, so sue me. For those of you wanting to know, the track there a little bit ago was by Andy Export, a tune called Brave New World, from an album entitled Still Shaking the Bush, Paul. And I love it. Provided to us kindly by our pal Ange, otherwise known as Franken Angel, in the chat room and in her public persona. Creator of the Horn Flyer, which you can get, if not already, you will be able to get on the homepage. As well as a link to the PDF file of the Horn Flyer, suitable for framing or passing out at frankenangel.com. I love the collaborative effort that is this network. It is a beautiful, beautiful thing.
Here in just a few minutes, we will be talking to the executive director of the Change to Win Coalition, Chris Chafe, regarding this sleazy anti-American tactic as engaged in by the right wing and a handful of America-hating Republican senators. By way of introduction to that, some food for thought. Now, this rolled in right after the show last night. And I love long, thoughtful emails like this. This comes from David in Tennessee. Am I the only one standing slack-jawed at the brazen effort to bust the UAW? That's precisely what all this reluctance to bail out General Motors and Chrysler is. A ham-fisted desire to injure, if not kill, unions. Done by 12 repig-licking senators from states with foreign auto companies in them. So bloody obvious as to be laughable when denied by the repigs. These were the same bastards that went all codependent when Detroit greased their palms to stop mileage standards, call a suburban assault vehicle a truck, and offer no meaningful stick-carrot process to bring American auto quality up to world standards. Now, at the 11th-plus hour, the bastards want to break the unions and outsource even more of the U.S. manufacturing base. This just in. China builds a great tank if one has the cash. And just behind the curtain, the thing that the neocons do not want to talk about. The less we manufacture here, the harder it will be to pay China what we owe them. In an effort to tease our way into a longer discourse, I believe Obama has a tougher hand to play than did FDR when entering office. FDR had coal and oil within the borders, iron ore within the borders, existing but dormant manufacturing base waiting for a wake-up call. A huge but underemployed workforce. A world wanting for and in need of what could be manufactured. A literate and well-trained workforce compared to the rest of the world. In many ways, 1932 America was today's China. The stock market crash had been absorbed and the bottom found. The climb out certain to be difficult, but it was ready to happen. Compare that with Barack Obama. BHO has an unknown bottom for the recession, a dwindling manufacturing base that is losing more of its desire to do so with each passing day. We no longer have the ability to manufacture and export our way out of this hole. In 1940, we saw a foreign leader outside of Europe or Britain in a car. It was an American-made car. Not now. A massive and powerful mechanism to thwart green power transition and the requisite manufacturing for the gear. We could put people to work, maybe even export, and cut down on imported oil. Massive transfers of money out of the country for foreign goods. Massive transfers of money out of the country for crude oil. Massive transfers of money out of the country for illegal drugs. Yes, drugs. We ship billions offshore for something that cannot be warred out of existence. A continuing drain of blood and treasure for wars that should have never been started. A reputation around the world that needs an incredible amount of repair. If we do not go back to the hard and tedious work of manufacturing, we are so screwed. But not to worry. A Texas representative spent time yesterday on the floor of the U.S. House introducing legislation to investigate the workings of the Bowl Championship Series. Don't! Great use of your time at this juncture in our nation's history, chump! I saw that story and it almost made me want to cry. Though I'm sure if you're a sports, especially if you're a Longhorns fan, you feel like that Texas really got screwed in this process. But congratulations. You know, Auburn was 13-0 a few years ago, and they got screwed, too. Screwed is a fraternity within college football. Frankly, there shouldn't be anything. There shouldn't be anything except the crisis, the immediate problems we have taking up our time. Just a minute. Sorry, I had to grab the phone there for a sec. Hey, boss, welcome to the program.
Hey, man. Listen, I know, you know, you got a guest coming on here, man, but I just, did you get a notice about Tar Heel, North Carolina?
No.
They had a union vote, and the union won.
Hot damn.
Smithfield Packing. Yeah, I mean, you know, with all the terrible news and, you know, these Republicans, I mean, that Mitch McConnell, my God. Anyway, the vote was 2,041 to 1,879, 162 vote, you know, in the positive. And, well, you know, I don't know how many people are familiar with the Smithfield Packing thing in Tar Heel. We've certainly talked about it before.
We sure have, and you know what a brutal fight that's been. I'm so proud for him. I could just bust.
I mean, what is this? 6 years? 8 years? I don't know how many. I mean, we talked to that guy in D.C. that time.
Yeah.
About it. So it's I just, like I said, with all the bad news, I thought a little good news would be nice.
That is good news.
You know, that's
what in terms of the process, though, Wayne, what happens next?
Well, here's what's wrong with our laws. Now they sit down to negotiate. And the way the laws are currently, it says that you must negotiate in good faith. There is no requirement to come to a deal. You know, that's... And the Employees Free Choice Act will eliminate that, because the Employee Free Choice Act says after 120 days, if you don't come to an agreement, there will be federal mediation and an agreement will be met and there will be a union contract. But the way it stands now with the law now, the only requirement is to bargain in good faith. And what they've done to us before and other people is, you know, they do this for a year. They show up for the meetings. You know, they, you know, do what appears to be bargaining in good faith. And then at the end of the year, they come to the union and say, we feel that you no longer represent a majority of our workers.
And that's an entirely subjective determination made on the part of the company and management, right?
And unfortunately, legal.
That's got to change.
Objector. Yes, it does have to change, and like I say, that's what the Employee Free Choice Act will do. So
that can't happen soon enough to suit me.
And, you know, did you see the vote last night?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, the nuclear option would have fixed that.
Yeah, it would have.
You know, and if Harry Reid, well, you know. And, I mean, did you see, I don't know, the news clip? Well, we could stay here tomorrow and the next day and the next day, and it still wouldn't change. You're the head of the Senate. Make them stay tomorrow and the next day and the next day.
You know what? You know, that was basically a cloture vote, a filibuster vote.
Yes.
And frankly, you know, it is within the power of Harry Reid, Wayne, to make the Republicans really, really filibuster.
Yes, it is.
And frankly, you know, as far as I'm concerned, this is so important. What literally the future of our country hangs in the balance on this. That it would not. I would have been proud of Harry Reid if he would have looked at Mitch McConnell and said, "Listen, I'm going to come back here and check in on December 25th, and your butt better be reading the Washington D.C. phone book in a filibuster,
or any other phone book of your choosing."
Yeah, right.
Right.
Yeah, you know, right wingery for dummies. Yeah, you know, whatever.
Right. Right. No, that's exactly. Let me. When the new Senate is convened, is, will there be a vote for a new majority leader?
There technically will be.
Okay.
Each new Congress has to completely reorganize itself.
Right.
But I haven't heard any meaningful rumblings of trying to do something other than Harry Reid.
Well, Harry Reid is, well, a disappointment, to put it mildly. But listen, man, you're...
Well, I was going to tell you, we have our guest on the line, boss, and I'm assuming Mr. Chafe ought to be somebody near and dear to your heart, seeing how the Change to Win Coalition represents the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Joiners.
But they do.
And given your position within Local 1911, I reckon you'll want to hear what he says.
And I will be listening.
All right. Boss, take care.
All right, I'll be talking to you.
All right, later.
Bye-bye.
Boss man Wayne. And we do have on the line with us the executive director of the Change to Win Coalition, Chris Chafe. He is, as I said, the Change to Win Coalition is an organization comprising a number of major labor organizations, including the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, the Laborers International Union, the Service Employees International Union, the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Joiners of America, with whom we had a very fruitful relationship for a time on this program, the United Farm Workers of America, the United Food and Commercial Workers International Union, who had a victory today in Tar Heel, North Carolina, and proud we are of them. So it is with great pleasure that I bring Chris Chafe on. Chris, welcome to the program, and thank you for taking time on your Friday night to join us.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure, and I enjoyed very much listening to your last guest.
That's the head man of the horn, and
he is
an amazing human being that I'm proud to call my friend.
Well, I've had the distinct pleasure of working with members of the carpenters and joiners all across the country, and I have learned a great deal from them, both about the perspective they bring to their work sites, the great political work that they do, the leadership that they provide to their communities. And my favorite thing about my time working with the carpenters across the country is going to their training centers, which are literally dotted all over America.
And they're amazing places, too.
File members, yeah, who are learning great skills and being at the very forefront of new developments in their field. I always tell folks that if you measure twice and cut once, you've learned a good lesson from a carpenter.
That's the absolute truth, and that's why I personally stay away from sharp objects. I leave that to the pros, Chris.
That's right.
Well, you've got a pretty strong statement here that I received from Change to Win earlier today, and I'm really glad that you could come on and talk about this, because it strikes me, and tell me if I'm wrong. The UAW is being used as the stalking horse for the, as far as these Republicans and the Senate are concerned, the UAW is the stalking horse for destroying every last vestige of organized labor in this country. Am I far off base?
I think that's right. I think that what we saw last night was essentially a cheap shot that was scored for political points by a group of increasingly weak Republican senators from a few core states who are trying to, they're playing a very dangerous game of politics with the American workforce. And what they did in denying this package really fundamentally was an attempt to place a shot across the bow on the Employee Free Choice Act, but it's also a shot that's going to land directly in the wallets of every single American worker and in every community that depends on people who work for a living to support our small businesses, eat in our restaurants, and especially here at the holiday season, support our retailers. And it's just it's a real disgrace. And so we felt it was absolutely essential to push back today all across the country and make sure that they are blamed appropriately for what they are doing and the risks that they are taking, and especially in light of the fact that less than 8 weeks ago, we saw this these same bodies spend $700 billion to bail out Wall Street, and now we cannot find it in our leadership capacity to stand up for American workers.
And the fact of the matter is, I at least couldn't help noting the obvious distinction that Detroit and manufacturing America are largely unionized operations, whereas, of course, Wall Street, for the most part, is not. Is that as plain a motive to you as it seems to me?
It is, but I want to also make it clear to all your listeners that this is an attack that's even broader than just going after union workforce, because the impact of what will happen if we see the big three go down will have a ripple effect. You know, I come out of the textile industry in North Carolina, and I have seen vibrant communities absolutely devastated when the local mills started to close, and you know that has that what happens in those communities is, as I'm sure you've seen there, is that literally everything begins to shutter its doors. And so if you can imagine the supply chains, which are now scattered across the Midwest, that feed those plants, many of which are unionized, some of which are not, they will all begin to close. And then all of the support system and economic infrastructure that's around that, all the uniforms that get produced for those workers, all the laundry that gets done for those work sites, all the tool manufacturing and all of the dealerships, I mean, you name it, there will not be a community in this country that doesn't get impacted here.
Well, this even this
point of view,
oh, I'm sorry, go
sorry.
Ahead. No, please.
No, I was going to say, from our point of view at Change to Win, we are standing shoulder to shoulder with our brothers and sisters at the UAW and in all the union facilities across the country that support the big three operations. But we are also standing up to say that this is an opportunity for us to make the smart investments in these companies to retool, which is why the money that was being voted on was already from a package that was about helping our domestic auto industry modernize and take advantage of the new technology. And we're not here to say that things shouldn't have been done sooner around a whole series of ways in which these cars have been made in terms of, you know, they were not at the forefront of new technologies and fuel efficiencies and hybrid cars and electric cars. And, you know, that's shame on all of us for that. But we have a moment right now where we could take the smart, pragmatic route and give them this support so that they can make those changes without having to go through the challenges of bankruptcy, support this workforce, and invest in American workers. And that's what this vote was really fundamentally about. And instead, these lawmakers from these, particularly the southern states where I happen to come from, they wanted to inflict an incredibly damaging blow that's going to have an impact far beyond the borders of their states.
I'm a born Southerner myself, Chris, and I'm the son of a union worker. I got an education thanks to all of that, and that's part and parcel of why I feel the way I do. Let me ask you though. Well, with regard to the pushback that you did today, one of the things that has struck me, because I follow media very, very closely as a function of what I do here, how, you know, this is a relatively small handful of minority party senators. How have they managed to get into the national zeitgeist, if you will, this idea of the union worker who makes too much money? What has happened to America when we look at working people and say they make too much money, but we blink at multi-million dollar banker bonuses?
That's right. Well, I think we should all have our eyes open about the fact that what we saw last night was the work of a core group of senators. What we see in the way in which American workers are degraded and disrespected is far broader of a process that is going on and has been going on for an awfully long time in this country, and where we have literally, I mean, the thing that I remember and think about all the time right now is how long it took us to create a consensus in government that we needed to raise something as fundamental as the minimum wage. American workers all over this country know that we have been in an economic recession and a crisis for many, many years. They've seen the value of their wages drop consistently since 1973. And we have seen this gap in wages, the health care crisis, the growing pension and retirement crisis, all of that being carried on their backs as they're being told that in a global economy, the American company cannot afford the fundamental core values and benefits that the labor movement and working families across this country helped to create. You know, in many cases, 80 years ago, with the strength of the example that we saw, frankly, starting right there in the auto industry in Michigan and Flint with the sit-down strike. So what we've seen here is much broader than simply the actions of a few individuals in the Senate and in the Congress. This is one moment in a long-term campaign that multinational corporate America has been working on and is prepared to put forward in throughout the media and throughout the public arena, blaming workers essentially and blaming the UAW for the choices of management. And you know, at the same time, you know, they all have a constant egg on their face around the kinds of golden parachutes and CEO compensation that happens every single day, the fleecing of this country that takes place, and of shareholders, frankly, that takes place, you know, throughout the bailout debate that we had 2 months ago, Change to Win and our brothers and sisters in the AFL-CIO and many progressive allies. We all raised a flag saying, we have been saying this was coming for 20 years. We have been saying we need fundamental restructuring and financial reforms in our system so that shareholders and workers are protected from what is increasingly an insider deal that is benefiting the top 1% of this country to the detriment of the bottom 90%. That's where all the money is going. And you know, when John McCain was talking to during the presidential about spreading the wealth, American workers know what spreading the wealth is all about. It means giving all their money to the top executives of their companies and the wealthiest people that are running these multinationals. And this is just another moment here where our debt and our choices and our trade deals and our public policy is catching up to us. And it's about time that we had the strength both across the country, in our communities, and with our public officials that we took a fundamental stand on behalf of our workers and on behalf of our children and on behalf of the kind of economy that we know we can build here if we make the right choices and make this economy work for everybody and not just the few at the top.
Well, it is... Obviously, I agree with everything you have just said. Let me ask you this. Because you mentioned this sort of holistic effect that, you know, it's not just the UAW a ripple effect, if you will, that it ripples out into communities and it affects all kinds of workers, all kinds of businesses. Is it these Republicans who are engaging in these shenanigans? Do they not understand that just as you described the supply chain, that these non-union plants in the South that were brought there by humongous taxpayer dollar giveaways? Do they not understand that these plants will also be affected by these supply chain ripples?
I think that they made their deal with whomever they made it with a long time ago. and that they have, you know, they sold out their taxpayers to get some of those jobs there. And you know, I live in North Carolina, and I've watched the competition from across the South where, you know, our states have been in vicious competition with each other to essentially give up everything in order to get jobs to come to the state and others around me.
Well, I think that's what Greg LeRoy called in the Great American Job Scam the shameful race to the bottom.
That's exactly right. And so we see it happen with multinational corporations who will chase that low wage all the way to Asia, disregard human rights for workers there, sell us the products back here in this country to folks facing debt because all their plants have closed. You know, we are stuck in a vicious, vicious cycle, and Greg is right, and you are right. And we really, this is not what American workers and what the American public want. You know, Change to Win has done some really, I think, important groundbreaking polling across the country of union and non-union workers, asking them what do they expect from their government, and with a resounding result, it is clear that the American public wants, whether they're union or non-union, they want a government who's going to stand up and fight for the American dream, who's going to stand up and invest in better jobs, who's going to stand up and invest in the right for people to have the right to join a union, the right to have collective bargaining, the right to have health care for their families and a secure pension and retirement. And what we see here is increasingly, over the last 25 years in particular, a government that really looks and feels like it's increasingly bought and sold, instead of one that really speaks to the core needs of the American public. And I'm encouraged, deeply encouraged. I've never seen anything like what we just experienced in this presidential campaign. The hunger for change and the willingness of people in communities all over the country to get involved in the political process, to see the stakes that were before us and the significance of their participation. And they were not voting for the kind of action that we saw last night, and they were frankly not voting for the kind of unbalanced bailout that we've seen that increasingly benefit the same people who got us into this mess and who've been self-dealing for a long time. They want to see business and the private sector and the public sector partner to get us out of this mess with a real manufacturing and industrial policy that we haven't had, certainly since before NAFTA, but I would argue for even longer than that. And we've got a new moment here all across this country through the development of new technology and green jobs and environmental advances. We've actually got a chance right now to reverse the kinds of declines we've had, to rebuild the communities that have been devastated by deindustrialization, and build our own energy infrastructure that's going to lower over the long haul our costs and our dependence on foreign oil, all these different things that we could do if we had visionary leadership. And I think we're about to turn a corner and enter into a moment where that might be possible. But that's only going to happen if the level of participation from workers and communities across this country, if people stay in this fight and recognize that we've got to keep the pressure on, keep demanding that change, and stand up for a government that's as good as the people it represents.
Well, that sort of, Chris,
that's what we're hoping to see happen.
That sort of leads, Chris, into what I suppose will be my one of my final two questions, or if not my final question. And that is, you mentioned the Employee Free Choice Act at the beginning of our conversation. What does last night's Senate vote presage as far as what we can expect in terms of the Senate Republicans' reaction and behavior with regard to that piece of legislation, which is, frankly, as important a piece of legislation as anything this new Congress will consider?
That's correct. Well, the most important thing here is that the crowd that tried to stall the situation last night, they'll be back, and they'll be spreading misinformation. And, you know, they're going to have a tremendous number of allies out there who are going to be trying to scare the public with ads and this and that and the other. And we know that they're going to be incredibly active. But the fact of the matter is there's going to be a much stronger Democratic majority, and it is a unified majority who have all come in pledging support for this kind of new position on the right to organize. And I think that we're going to wage a very, very strong fight with the support of the leadership and the support of the White House to stand up and make it clear that this is a moment of choice, and choice is the key word. And we're going to provide lawmakers and the general public with a clear set of issues here that frames the Employee Free Choice Act as an absolutely essential foundation for economic recovery. If we want to see our debt problem engaged, if we want to see our wage gap engaged and fixed, if we want to see our health care crisis engaged and fixed, if we want to make an improvement in our retirement security challenges, we need to pass the Employee Free Choice Act, because we know that every time in history, if you look at what happened in our economy from 1935 to 1974, when majority sign-up was the rule and law of the land, we saw an enormous increase in productivity at our work sites. We saw the greatest growth and development of the middle class in our history. And we know that in this moment, just like it was in 1935, if we give our workforce the choice to bargain for themselves, and we give them the choice to go with a union for representation, and we give it to them, to the workers, not to their employer, we know what's going to happen. We know that the polling shows 60% of the American public polled said they'd join a union and want to have the chance to bargain for their own wages and health care and retirement benefits. But the only thing that keeps them back is the incredible intimidation and illegal activity that the current law has essentially allowed to fester. So this is going to be a real battle. But we have a much stronger team on the field in about 4 weeks, and we intend to give it everything we've got, because I believe in the American people's ability to understand that the same folks that are attacking the UAW right now, the same folks who are attacking the notion of the Employee Free Choice Act, are the same people who have been pushing down workers' wages, taking away health care benefits, moving people into 401ks, and then ending their matching plans for that same program, and who have been trying to privatize Social Security. They don't care about the good of the whole. They're serving a very small interest of people, and that's not going to be tolerated. And I think we're going to have a great victory here that's going to really give us a real shot in the arm for our economic recovery, and I'm looking forward to that fight.
I do as well. And my last question of you, Chris, and thank you very much for the time that you have given us this evening, especially so late on a Friday, is if you would do us the kindness, as we do enter the fight for the Employee Free Choice Act, if you would do us the kindness of returning and just discussing that a little bit and helping the audience here, which is very much activist-oriented and very much pro-labor, if you would help us with the way that we talk about the Employee Free Choice Act and the way that we advocate for it. The horn will be here. The Head On Radio Network will be here, standing shoulder to shoulder, both with Change to Win and all the other brother and sister labor organizations out there, to get this across. Because, like you said, this is a means by which we literally save the vast majority of the crises that confront America today. So I hope we can expect to hear back from you.
That'd be my pleasure, sir. I appreciate you having me on tonight.
Chris, it has been an honor, and it's a pleasure to make your acquaintance, and stand firm and stand tall and fight on. We're mighty proud.
Same. You do the same. Be well.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Chris Chafe, Executive Director of Change to Win. If you want to learn a little bit more about Change to Win, you can, of course, go to their website. It's easy to find. It's changetowin.org, just like it sounds, change2towin.org. And again, that's an affiliated group of the Teamsters, the laborers, the service employees, the carpenters, joiners, and millwrights of America who were so instrumental in getting the horn off the ground, the farm workers of America and the Food and Commercial Workers International Union, as well as Unite Here. This is a fight that simply we cannot shrink from, because it's something that I hope the environmental community will also become very, very active in, because as you heard Chris Chafe say, it is organized labor that will be at the heart and the very center of the fight for the green economy as it goes forward. There is no overestimating the importance of the coalition that we build to get the Employee Free Choice Act passed. And frankly, if last night doesn't give you an idea, while there will be changes in the Senate, the other side is going to fight dirty. They're going to wallow in the mud, they're going to sling the mud, and they are going to make this as filthy and bloody a fight as they possibly can. So might be about time to start, girding up thy loins. As we move toward the close of the program, I mentioned Greg LeRoy and the Great American Job Scam. You know, Greg was on the program a couple of years back. Probably ought to have him back sometime soon. Wayne just provided me with some very interesting numbers. Those southern plants that people like Richard Shelby of Alabama have been touting. You want to know how many tax dollars were given away to lure those plants to those locations in those states where where organized labor is treated not with disdain but with open hostility? Well, the Nissan plant in Smyrna, Tennessee in 1980 was directly facilitated by $233 million of taxpayer money. How about Mercedes-Benz in Vance, Alabama? They came, Mercedes-Benz, Daimler-Benz came to Vance, Alabama in 1993, only after the state of Alabama had given away $258 million of its taxpayers' money. Remember that whole Republican thing? It's your money. Well, if you're an Alabamian, your money went to pay Mercedes to come and build a plant in Vance. Let's see, Buffalo, West Virginia. It's easier to organize here, but Toyota in Buffalo, West Virginia is not a union shop. It came to West Virginia in 1996 with more than $15 million of West Virginians' hard-earned money to get them here. Honda came to Lincoln, Alabama in 1999, and it cost Alabamians $248 million to buy those jobs. Nissan went to Canton, Mississippi in 2000, and it cost Mississippians, who don't have that kind of money, frankly, $295 million. Toyota went to Huntsville, Alabama in 2001 for $30 million. Hyundai went to Montgomery, Alabama in 2002 for $252 million. Toyota is in San Antonio, Texas since 2003. For $133 million. Now do you see why Greg LeRoy calls it the shameful race to the bottom? And yeah, what Luke mentioned earlier, Volkswagen is coming to Chattanooga, Tennessee for the princely ransom of $577 million. And I didn't even mention some of them on the list. BMW, Spartanburg, South Carolina, $150 million. The grand total reaches $3.58 billion just to pay the plants to come and locate. Wow. At least I guess it makes it makes the hypocrisy of folks like Bob Corker and Lamar Alexander and Richard Shelby a little easier to comprehend now, doesn't it? Sure does. So thanks for a wonderful week, everyone. I look forward to Monday. I hope you do as well. Don't forget the weekend schedule. We have a brand new Rick's Place with horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner. There will be a new Rick Smith show, another great voice for working people. And, of course, Night Sounds with Billy Shears. And on Sunday, right after Rama's Help Me, I'm an American, John Fox and All Foxed Up, all coming your way right here on the horn. Thanks to John Fox. Thanks to Peter Godbold. Thanks to Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk who literally single-handedly saved liberal talk with White Rose Society beginning about 2002. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net and coalriverwind.org. Remember, the Coal River Wind Project is predicated on bringing good union jobs in perpetuity to keep that wind project going. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
Anything I've said, you know what to do. Just go to RadioInsideScoop.com. Say whatever you will. Have a wonderful weekend. This is Mark Levine signing off.
It's a lovely Friday. It's a lovely Friday here in the hills and hollers. About 11 o'clock last night, the sleet started falling. It quickly transformed itself to snow. And it has been beautifully snowily gray here all day long.
Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of the sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountain poverty. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills, from beautiful West High Cloud, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy!
just like being at a holiday party in some corporate somewhere and falling over the hills. The little combo is just playing its heart out. Left of wonderful West Vidot, Virginia. We've been hearing blasts.
Had to pay extra for the piccolo. A
couple of them in the 4 o'clock Eastern time hour.
Okie dokie.